Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the...
The place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said.
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it is now time for the Place to Be podcast. And now your hosts, Justin Rosero and Scott Criscolo.
Very nice, Mr. Criscolo.
Selector, activate your transistor. Transmit the audio waves to your system. Subsonic megabolt bass drum be kicking. Na 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 na, na 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 na. Ghetto blaster blasting on your block. Pumping out megahertz,
megawatts.
You could get electric shock from my floor. Bitches on my dick, thing on my dildo. Do-re-mi.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero. And it is once again time to delve deep back into our vintage vault, and to do that, as always, I need to bring in my PIC, Scott Criscolo. Scott, how you doing?
JR, always a pleasure, sir. Happy Easter weekend to all of you, to all of our Christian friends, and to all of our Jewish friends. Happy Passover. It's sundown Friday as we are talking now, so obviously you enjoyed or are enjoying your Seder meal. But yes, indeed, this evening for episode 119. Place to Be podcast. It is special. We're so busy with a lot of stuff going on this end of winter, beginning of spring, that I feel like when we do a vault, it's like extra special because we don't do them. We haven't been able to do them as often as we had been. So it is nice to delve into the big cell, to the big silver box.
Yes, and I'm fighting off precious hours of sleep to deliver this.
yes,
content for you, Place to Be Nation. So
yes. So we will. We're going to try and be. Not quick, but we'll be nice and expeditious this evening. For tonight, it's time.
Hey, what is going on here?
Oh, I didn't know you were in there. Actually, you're always in there. What do I think? You're not always in there. Tonight, on the Place to Be podcast, a new year dawns. You've been warned.
Tonight contains material of a graphic nature. Viewer indiscretion, I mean viewer discretion, is advised.
So, measure a champion by size, or the strength exuded by muscle and bone. Others are gauged by speed, lauded for courage, or no, for their gift to enthrall. In the World Wrestling Federation, the reigning champion is defined by Hart. Bret the Hitman Hart. A living legend who has conquered adversity. A man who continues to overcome seemingly insurmountable odds. But tonight, the Hitman must face the challenge of a man who is no mere mortal. A force whose powers are mythical. A phenom whose heart at times can be cold. Razor Ramon, the four-time Intercontinental Champion, displays the heart and ferocity of a lion as well. But tonight, he faces a most peculiar foe in the bizarre Goldust, a man whose fascination with machismo seemingly weighs more on his heart than the desire for the gold around Razor's waist. And tonight, in the over-the-top rope Royal Rumble match, 30 WWF superstars will attempt to prove that they too possess the heart of a champion. In this battle of elimination, the sole survivor could be the returning hero, the former WWF champion, the new force invading the Federation, or any number of mighty superstars who will go to any lengths to win the guaranteed title shot and a chance to be called champion at WrestleMania. Tonight, the passion and heroics of these athletes will surely pen a new definition for champion.
Well, if that doesn't get you all jacked up, I don't know what will.
They just get better and better by the month with those intros. Of course, tonight, here on the Vintage Vault on the Place to Be podcast, we give you the 1996 Royal Rumble.
And, of course, I had the great Sunny intro, which they would do throughout early 96.
Yeah, I was actually surprised. I didn't think they started doing that till the end of 96 into 97 when the product started to kind of turn a bit. But I guess they did it earlier than mm-hmm. that. Interesting. I don't remember that.
Yeah, this is the beginning of Sunny's being more than just an old-school valet. She begins to use her sex appeal and feminine wiles a little bit more around this time.
Nothing beats a little feminine wiles from Sunny. I'm excited, JR. You and I have been looking forward to this calendar year for quite some time.
Yeah, and I was actually talking to our man Grant Owens today extensively about 1996. We had a little chat this afternoon, and it's such an important year in wrestling history, especially WWF, and I want to track that as we go. There's so many new names pop up, and Vince really purges a lot of the flotsam, as some may say, out of the Federation. This guy's had just been stale and just kind of clogging up his mid-card and even the main event scene. And a lot of that's just kind of jettisoned over these next few weeks. And he starts bringing in a lot of cast-offs from WCW, guys that were pushed out when Hogan and his cronies took over. Mm-hmm. And he starts to use those guys to infuse his, you know, upper mid-card, and then he pushes guys that had been in his mid-card up to the mid-event. So the whole card is kind of freshened up now. And a lot of changes, and also one of the overall changes in tone of the promotion is more of an athletic style, more of like a legit sports style, and it's something they had not really done before.
Right.
And we see it started in late 95, and I don't know if you can thank Bill Watts or just the direction they had to go to compete. And you'll see that here. I feel like even starting with the show, they just seem to do more of a sports build for a lot of these matches. We talked about that a little bit with Brett and Diesel Survivor Series, but I don't know if you ever got that same feeling. They, even in that opening promo we heard, you know, it was very focused on athleticism and stuff like that more than just storylines.
Well, I wouldn't thank Bill Watts, I would think.
I mean, he wasn't around long, but it could have been a lot of his influence.
No, but I mean, I wouldn't thank Bill. I'd thank Jim.
Oh, right.
Bill doesn't. I don't know who Bill is. Jim Watts, I would think.
Obviously.
And his wife, Phoebe, or Chloe, or whatever his wife's name is. I don't know. Yeah, I concur, because obviously, you know, for the first, the way we usually do it here on the Place B podcast, we obviously start the pay-per-view era in 1985. And definitely for the first 10 years, you know, the main events were mostly loaded with big, jacked up, you know, big monster heels and monster baby faces, Hogan-sized guys, and you know, those kind of guys who were just big, and the athletic guys were relegated to the mid-card and the Intercontinental title feuds and stuff. But you're right. Starting with this show and really going through for the next few years, they definitely take another, you know, a different turn for the way the product. And I think finally Vince is starting to listen to people who are saying, look, you're getting really dated now. And I think it's pretty clear. We even saw that the last, what, three or four pay-per-views of 95, that just everything looks so dated.
Right, and, but, just, and the thing, you know, too, the thing too at 96 is, you know, there's still some vestiges of the old school. Like, he'll still have some gimmick guys, but as we see, most of those guys are basically fodder.
Right.
But yeah, he seems to take more risks, and even though he has, you know, an old school, maybe not size-wise, but a white bread, you know, white meat baby face on top, and Sean, very pure, he, the style in the ring becomes more hard-hitting and a little stiffer and a little more focused. And actually, I think I was reading somewhere recently that Jim Ross had a hand in booking at this point, too, so he could have played a role in this as well. But it just seemed more legit. That, you know, the matches seemed a little bit more hard-hitting, a little more realistic.
Right.
And that's a trend throughout 96 that they focus on, the more smash-mouth kind of wrestling.
Yes, exactly. So why don't we delve right in? January 25th. What? Just getting started. I know you're sitting at the table chomping the bit. Give me a minute. January 21st, 1996. Live from the Celland Arena in Fresno, California. Begins the trend of the aforementioned VKM starting to put the Rumble in some warm weather places.
Yes.
Nothing against, of course, your beloved Providence. But do you remember being cold that night? I'm sure it was. Probably was.
Dead no,
weather.
I don't know.
I would think so.
I remember a lot of things, but unless I was out in the weather, I mean, I was obviously home watching the show, so I don't really remember the weather.
No,
so.
I'm talking about when you were at the Rumble in 94.
Oh, yeah, it was cold that night, yeah.
Yeah, so he was probably like, screw this. Although he does, I mean, as we go through time, he does go to some cold weather locales for for Rumbles. Not often, though.
Celland Arena.
Celland Arena, the would eventually be called the Save Mart Arena. Attendance, 9,600. Now, I don't know the, I'll have to check. Let me check our man Graham Cawthon. Is that the capacity? It says sellout. Wow, that place wasn't very big, huh? Interesting.
Yeah, it's Fresno, I guess. I don't know. Maybe Grant Owens can check in on us. He's our all things California correspondent, or Todd Weber.
Yeah, exactly. Your announcers, of course, the aforementioned at the play-by-play table, Vincent Kennedy McMahon, and surprisingly, probably because the normal color guy was actually on the pay-per-view.
Yes.
A pleasant surprise sitting in the color seat. The always awesome Mr. Perfect.
And I think he actually adds a lot to the show. I really like him here, and we'll talk about it throughout. And he was another reason that you started to get more of that legitimate feel. You know, not only adding Jim Ross to a lot of the broadcasts now, but also including Mr. Perfect, who brought more of that legitimate sports background. You know, Lawler was there a lot for comedic relief, even though he was still pretty good in 96. But Perfect really added more. You know, I'm not going to put him on Jesse's level, but he was more in that vein of a Jesse Ventura more than... If you look at, like, the lineage of color guys, Bobby Heenan, to me, is the godfather of comedy guys like Lawler and stuff like that. And then you have, you know, Jesse's kind of the lineage where Mr. Perfect would fall into.
Yes. And that and it fits because you're dealing with former wrestlers, guys who, you know, have the insight that a Bobby or a – well, maybe not Lawler, but a Bobby or somebody else may not have. But in a different perspective. Buy rate 1.1. Which actually isn't bad for that era. 1.1. When you get a whole number after the to the left side of the decimal point,
yes,
you're not doing too bad. All right. We had mentioned in the last vault for In Your House 5 that they no longer do technical dark matches or, shall we say, Coliseum video exclusives, but they do something different.
Well, this was PSC. And this is the official debut of it.
Yes. PSC, let everyone know what debuted. For those that were, shall we say, hedging on whether or not to get the pay-per-view.
Yes, well, it's called The Free-for-All, and it aired on the TV Guide or Preview channel. It'd be, obviously, Free-for-All is the name in shows, and they would air 30 minutes before, and basically it would just take place of the preview show, although I still think they did a preview show. Or was it the same? Did they air the Free-for-All on? Yeah, it must have been the same. I think they aired it on both stations. So it was on the pay-per-view channel, and you could watch it there even if you hadn't ordered. And it was also on the TV Guide Network. So the usual hype stuff, and they would usually throw a match in starting here. So this will be the trend over, what, the next 2.5 years until late 98?
Yeah, well until an actual show debuts.
Right, yeah, summer 98.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that when we get there. And actually, our dark match is actually a very important one. Interesting storyline. Now, of course, I'm totally offended that he was stuck here.
Yeah, but it plays a role. He's in later in the show.
Well, that is true. Still, though. See? They would put the right guy in here to hook you to buy the pay-per-view. That's why they did
it. I'm sure that's what
no one else
exactly
can do
what it was.
That's exactly what it was. You know it, and I know it. Anyway, of course, you hear
I'm going to be with the Silverback and his bride tomorrow night, and I'll have to play this episode for them.
Yeah, I got a comment about that later. Anyway.
Has he already left Connecticut? Is he already in Rhode Island?
No, I think he was leaving tomorrow morning.
Oh, I should probably hit him up then. I want him to bring the wedding video.
Yeah, no, I don't think he left yet.
Okay.
No, he's leaving tomorrow morning.
All right, I'll hit him
tonight.
Up.
I didn't see him much today, to be honest with you. But anyway, as you hear the music, it is my betrothed, the great Hunter Hearst Helmsley, taking on... Do we have to preview this guy? We already mentioned him, didn't we?
We talked to him.
Yep. We already did, as I thought so. The dumpster, Duke Drosy.
Get the rich guy and the garbage man. Battle of the classes. Class war. Draw the middle class.
Yes. But there's a reason for this match. It's not just some random match. The dumpster won at about 6.5 minutes by disqualification. Thus, the Duke gets number 30 in the Royal Rumble match. And my poor betrothed is number one.
And they even do a little dusty finish where Hunter wins, but gets reversed. I think doesn't Gorilla come out? I believe so.
Yeah, Gorilla comes out, yeah.
Yeah, Gorilla comes out and reverses it. Something that obviously never, ever happens, except for when they needed to. But Hunter had cheated to win. Gorilla comes out. And this was all part of his being the fan-friendly president. Still interim president, though. He's not been officially named yet.
No, exactly. So there you go. So Triple H, Mr. Helmsley, of course... You know why he's doing it. He wants to go his my ex's path of winning early in the Rumble. It's all we had dinner before the show.
Okay.
All right. So anyway, Mr. Helmsley goes in at number one, and the dumpster is number 30. Now,
some would argue that you're Mr. Helmsley's dumpster, but that's another.
And I thought you were too tired for the quickie. Anyway. No. All right. I just said quickie, too. I just opened up another one for you, but that's all right. Never mind. Let's get to the first match. Okay. I was about to say, the hilarity continues as we open the show with our
the
man.
Dirty Black Dog.
Yeah, Mo Dib. The big man, Ahmed Johnson, the Pearl River, whatever his nickname was, Pearl River Mo Dib, as they continue the feud from the previous month's pay-per-view, taking on Double J, Jeff Jarrett. What's the music supposed to make it more legible? I guess
so. Those are from like the old Warzone video game, actually.
Oh God, it was actually a good game. The one for PS1.
Yes.
Oh, that was very good.
The first was the first one, right?
Yeah, and then Attitude was after that. Attitude was the really good one though. That was when you could make your own rings and stuff. By the way, in terms of aesthetics, we didn't mention this the year before, but sadly, the always awesome classic Federation Rumble logo has been retired, and we have a brand new Royal Rumble logo for this year. It's like those kind of straighter letters that are all crashed together.
Yes.
So the old classic Rumble logo has been retired. Very sad. Always. It's very hard because the old WrestleMania logo is always great, but I have to say the old Rumble logo. Might be my favorite. Might be my favorite. Anyway, this of course feud continues on from December. That whole Buddy Rydell debacle of In Your House 5.
Nature Boy, Buddy Rydell.
Buddy Rydell. I mean, the match is not bad. I mean, it's not great, but obviously Jarrett was, checking out at this point. It's funny. We'll talk more about it as time continues into the later on to the decade, but it's very weird how Jeff Jarrett and the WWF had a very odd relationship. Do you ever notice that? Like, he's there, kind of, and then he's gone, but is he really gone? Yeah. It's just such a mess. It was very weird, the kind of weird relationship he had with them.
Right, yeah. Well, he left, obviously, after In Your House 2, which we documented at our last show, and then he's back here. And this is it again. He leaves after this. Actually, he's not even on TV again after this match at all. He would switch over to WCW, and he'd be there throughout 1996 and most of 1997. So,
yeah, and I actually kind of enjoyed his storylines in WCW a little bit more.
He had all that stuff going. He'd do the thing where he was trying to become a horseman, and then everyone thought he was going to go to the NWO, but he didn't, and then he vanishes from there as quickly as he leaves here. But maybe not nearly as quickly. But this match is all right. It gets the crowd going. I mean, Ahmed was still pretty over at this point. Not much other than Ahmed showing his power. Jarrett cheats, takes over, and then we get the fucked up finish where Jarrett just goes to the top rope with his guitar and smashes it over Ahmed's head and gets disqualified.
Yes. Yeah, so there you go. So Ahmed wins, continues his hot streak.
Let me ask you this, though. Do you think they knew Jarrett was leaving, or why would they protect him here? I mean, do you think they thought the feud was continuing?
Well, I mean, we should check historywwe.com, our man Graham Cawthon, to see how far into 96 Jarrett stuck around. I mean, did he leave immediately after this? Was he around for another month? We're curious.
Wiki said he had a contract dispute, and that's why he left. Let me check, but I don't think he... I don't remember him being on TV at all after the Rumble. I don't, unless he was on house shows, but...
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, because it would make no sense. Ahmed should have just, power-bombed him and ended it. I mean, it really is... It's kind of an odd ending for if a guy's gonna
right. If he was leaving, why not job him out?
Yeah, exactly. And particularly if he was, he was just leaving and going back to Memphis or something, whatever. But I mean, particularly if he was going to right to WCW, it'd be even stupider to protect him.
All right, he was on a house show. Well, actually, according to this, he was on Superstars 127. He fought Razor Ramon.
That's the week after
Superstars 217. He interfered. Ahmed defeated the 123 Kid. Razor and Jarrett interfered. January 24th, January 25th, 27th. Oh, wow, he was around for a while. 28th, February 14th, February. Oh, wow. He's around until February? I don't remember this at all.
Wow. I don't either. So,
February,
according to that,
February 20th, he was subbed out. So, it looks like mid-February. All February right, so 17th like... was his last house show. He lost to Ahmed. And he was actually USWA champion at this point. So, he must have been working both.
Yeah. So you figure 21st of January. At least he was around for, what, another 4 weeks? Probably 4 or 5 weeks.
So, here's an interesting match. At the USWA card, February 14th, he teams with Jerry Lawler to defeat Bret and Undertaker by disqualification.
That might have been cool to be to live down there, in the Mid-South
Coliseum.
Sure,
at this point, yeah, they were having a lot of crossovers.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's what I'm kind of hoping. This new, not to change subjects quick, but I'm kind of hoping that the new, they do this new developmental up here. Kind of hopefully we fall in, get that same kind of situation. But all right, so Ahmed Johnson wins by DQ. Although you really, which makes no sense. But I guess if he was supposed to stick,
will you stop?
Sorry, Mr. President. Although I'm still kind of torn, though, because maybe he was just playing his, kind of like Mike Rotundo did when he left in 85. Maybe he was just playing his dates out. I don't know.
Well, no, this says he had a contract dispute. So I'm sure he had more time left. I don't think it was a deal where he was just running out the string. I'm guessing they had some plans. Because looking at those house show results and even those Superstars appearances, it looks like he was actually setting up for almost like a rehash with Razor a little bit, too. So I don't know where they're headed with him, but I honestly don't remember him being around past this. So it was beyond my
very
massive
weird
scope of wrestling memory.
Yeah, it's very, very weird that Ahmed would just Pearl River plunge him and get it over with. So, all right, so Ahmed wins the opener, continues to stay red hot, Moa Dib.
Right, and decent enough. I mean, it wasn't bad by any means. It just wasn't too much to it.
Exactly. All right, next up, to number two on the card, we have our first title match of the evening as the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships are on the line. When your champions, Bart, that was 2 years before, Bart and Billy Gunn, the Smoking Guns, take on actually a debut team for us. We haven't talked about these guys yet. Well, we talked about one of them, but not about his partner. Our man Skip, Chris Candido, the Body Donna, has a partner, and they are the Body Donnas. His partner is Zip.
Yes. During a match with Rad Radford on 1-6 Superstars, a new wrestler debuted to help Skip pick up his win. And the wrestler looked just like Skip's twin brother. He had the same trunks, same dyed blonde haircut. Sonny let us know that his name was Zip, and they made their official tag team debut on 120, defeated Chaz Warrington and Glenn Ruth. Zip was portrayed by veteran wrestler and former Heavenly Body, Dr. Tom Pritchard.
Yes. Hey, another guy who always had a gig, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Always a guy who had a job. He's a good wrestler, too.
Yeah, as a team, I was always torn on the Body Donnas, because as a team in the ring, and like skill-wise, they were really good.
Yes, they were.
The gimmick was just stupid.
At this point, in my opinion, it was 95. Had they both come in 95, it might not have been as bad because it kind of went along with the rest of the cartoony crap. But at this point, right, we wanted to see just straight up, like you said, the era was changing and you kind of wanted to see something a little different. But
yeah, so it's kind of goofy to see these two guys, Zip and Skip. I mean, and they could have been a legit tag team. This is a year, and we'll chronicle this, as we go throughout 1996, that as good as the rest of the show was and as much as things are improving, the tag division is just atrocious. And if these guys would looked a little bit more legitimate and were Chris Candido and Tom Pritchard and, had a better look to them, I think they'd be remembered more fondly than what they become. But as is, I mean, this match here, they're pretty good challengers. And I remember thinking at the time that they had a very good chance of winning the titles.
Well, I would think so. I mean, they were right now the tag team division was kind of in flux a little bit. There weren't exactly a dearth of legitimate, tag teams. So really, they were pretty necessary, and they get the shot here. And it wasn't a bad match. It was pretty good. They had four good workers. Bart and Billy were kind of in their prime right here as a team.
And this is also the debut of Sonny's skirt.
Oh,
before this,
okay,
she's had like the little bike shorts on.
Yeah, she did. She had the little Shawn Michaels referee shorts. Now she has the skirt. So, and the match itself is pretty good. Obviously, as you mentioned earlier, we start seeing Sunny not just rah-rahing with the towel, but she starts to use her feminine wiles to kind of distract. She would do that quite a bit throughout 1996.
Oh yeah, yep.
She went through more tag teams than Captain Lou Albano. Big, fat, sloppy pig.
No, as many as that asshole.
Well, that's true.
And she was at least transparent about it.
Yeah, exactly.
She was like out front. Albano tried to pretend he wasn't doing all that.
Yeah, exactly. And she's not a big, fat, sloppy pig. So,
no.
Yeah, I mean,
well,
it,
she would be at one point. But.
Unfortunately. Pace was brisk. She adds to the intrigue of the match. You know, legitimate shot. Rumble always, you know, the Rumble pay-per-view is always good for a title change. We'd see one, but not here. But eventually, the Guns win it with a quick roll up.
Yeah, the Donnas are going for a double suplex, and Billy spears one, and Bart falls down and rolls the other one up, so he gets the pin. So yeah, solid match, and you know me, I'm always a fan of title defense, solid title either televised or pay-per-view defenses by champions. So it was, it was a good win, and I liked where the Guns were headed. They were really great, gaining some cred after winning the titles back in September, but that would all quickly be derailed, which we'll talk about in a couple shows.
Yes, yeah. They would not hold the titles for long, but no one would actually defeat them, but we'll get to that in a little bit.
Right. So coming off of this now was a very interesting piece of business that we need to discuss.
I bought myself Network. I bought myself World Series. I bought myself a library of classic movies. But why can't I buy WWE?
We've been trying, Ted.
And how come their wrestling is still better than ours?
They've got better athletes. All we've got are the disloyal, greedy has-beens from the 80s.
Who you calling a has-been, bro?
Can't blame a guy for trying to make a buck.
Who you calling disloyal? Besides, I started in the 70s, not the 80s.
Well, go out there and buy me some of those WWE Generation Superstars.
We've been trying, Ted.
We need more action from our stars. I want them to pull out all the stops.
Okay, boss. We have some suggestions. Nacho, how about this maneuver?
We never ain't done it in my entire career, and I ain't about to try it now.
How about climbing the ropes and performing some aerial tasks?
At my age, my feet don't leave the ground.
Well, tell us, what can you boys do?
You can't teach old dogs new tricks. The new WWE generation on top of the hill, not over it.
Huckster, what if we called you the boy toy? Yeah.
All right. So on January 1st was a very interesting Raw. It was the Raw Bowl tag match where they had four teams competing. They had the mat, you know, dressed up like a football field. They all had jerseys on. It was actually a pretty cool little concept they did. But also on that episode was the debut of Billionaire Ted's Wrestling War Room. And as 1996 dawned and Nitro had been on the air for a few months and Eric Bischoff kept taking his pot shots at Vince and the WWF, you know, giving away their match results and crapping on the show, he decided to start firing back. But instead of doing so, but just improving his product, he went the low road, as Vince is often wont to do. And he started doing these skits where Ted Turner, Hulk Hogan, known as the Huckster, Randy Savage, known as the Nacho Man, and a Scheme Gene, and a bunch of other yes men sitting around a table. One of them actually portrayed by a writer at the time, Vince Russo. Mm-hmm. So what they did basically was what you heard right there. They mocked WCW for stealing the old WWF talent, running with guys on top that were old hat. you know, ironic because of what would happen, of course, years later. But this, you know, it was a weird attack. And I remember at the time thinking it was funny for the first few. And, you know, they were hokey, but they actually would get pretty mean-spirited by the end when they start attacking, like, Ted Turner's personal life and, you know, requesting that the FCC break up his monopoly and all this crazy shit and claiming predatory business practices and just weird stuff. And, you know, not many people felt bad for Vince because it was a lot of the things he had done, like, back in the early 80s to the territories. So there weren't too many people upset that this was happening to him. Mm-hmm. So it was almost, you know, it seemed a little boyo cried. No, I don't want to say boyo cried wolf, but I don't know. Just, there weren't many people like coming rushing to defend him, basically, is what I'm trying to say. So
I'll tell you, there's two reasons why. Number one, I had never thought these were funny from the outset, but no, nah, I thought that
the first couple. I thought that one, that was the first one. I think I liked the Savage line. I actually started in the 70s. Like, that was kind of funny. And
I guess I was still kind of fans of those guys. I don't know. I think that.
Oh yeah, it didn't sway me at all. I wasn't like, yeah, that's right. But you know, I just was.
Yeah. It was phony fun was at the table. That's different. But anyway, I think the problem was the product was growing. For Vince, he was starting to turn the corner, and we talked about it. Instead of I think he was getting smarter guys in the office. But this was clearly one of those. He wouldn't listen to anybody. I'm sure more than one person said, "Vince, this is a pretty stupid idea."
I really think early on it wasn't meant to be as angry and mean as it was. I thought it was just meant to poke fun, which I thought was okay because, you know, something like ECW was doing at the time, and it made them look a little hip, WWF doing this kind of thing. You know, it was like if they did one or two, it would have been funny. You know, it was really crazy because I remember even at the time being surprised because they didn't really ever acknowledge the competition. So for them all of a sudden to start talking about Hogan and Macho Man again was like, what the hell's going on? I thought it almost like signified like, okay, we're finally ready to fight back. We're not going to be above taking little shots like this and naming the competition. So I thought on that level it was okay. But as the weeks went on, it just got weirder and weirder. And then as we'll see, it led up to WrestleMania where they had the blow off of all the skits. But and actually there'd be some funnier ones again leading into Mania. I thought that was the better stuff. But the things like around February and heading into Mania was where they got really fucked up.
So. Right. Yeah, they did.
And I don't think they served much purpose. I don't think it worked on any level.
No, I don't think so either. And to be honest with you, in terms of competition, what's funny is that we were still in a phase where, yeah, there was competition, but it wasn't at that Monday Night War level yet.
I don't know. I disagree. I definitely think it was because, first off, they went head-to-head with them. And Bischoff was already giving away. I mean, he was giving away results from the start, taking shots at their product. And don't forget, Medusa now had already happened. Lundra Blaze dropping the title in the trash.
Yeah, I guess.
So there was a lot going on. And, you know, there were, I think, rumblings already of the two departures that would happen later in the year. I don't know if it was official yet or anything had come to fruition.
Well,
but
when we get to the next match, we'll see that I don't know if they were totally rumblings yet, but maybe,
right.
Maybe one of them was a rumbling. But we'll get to him later as well. I don't know about the other one.
Yeah, maybe not.
The other one, when we get to our next match, I don't know if the other one was really that ready.
No, maybe you're right. So
one of them was, though.
But, I mean, there was still rating talent on and off. And I think there was a lot of bad blood there. And like I said, I think, you know, firing that first shot back over the bow by Vince and acknowledging the competition for once, and I think that was okay. I do. But and I do think the wars were more legitimate at this point than maybe you were stating before.
I guess what shocked me, I know we kind of knew that him and Vince were not getting that him and Vince, honestly, who the him is, Hogan and Vince were not getting along. I think we all, that was kind of out there already. But I was very shocked that he was making fun of Savage and particularly Mean Gene. I didn't think either. I didn't realize there was bad blood unless Savage and I don't know how. I've never watched a show.
Well, I think Savage is a victim of circumstance because I think he, you know, I think he was just in the crossfire basically because Vince wanted to take shots at the old guys that were on top of WCW, guys that had been raided from him, and he was trying to get over that he had this new generation of talent that he didn't need those guys. So I think Savage just kind of lumped in. Should I read that Gene info we found?
Yeah, I should. I was. That's right. I think you should read it because maybe there was something going on between the two of them. Go ahead. Yeah, okay. Fire it off.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of this either until the other day. I came across, stumbled over this. The November 15th, 1993 Observer. Gene Okerlund made comments on his Hotline debut that really ruffled feathers in Titan Sports. Okerlund categorized himself as the anchor announcer for the WWF for the past 10 years and said he had philosophical and intellectual differences with Vince McMahon, and that for the past 3 years, the two of them were barely on speaking terms. He then criticized Titan's recent hirings, mentioned by name Jim Ross, Bonnie Blackstone, who was already no longer with the company, Jim Cornette, Bruce Pritchard's brother, so of course Tom Pritchard, and Todd Pettengill. Poor Pettengill. And noted that TV ratings had declined over the past 3 years. At this point, Gene fell into fiction, claiming that he hosted All American Wrestling, that they got no production budget, and the ratings were excellent, and that Vince used the money that should have been spent on All American for Monday Night Raw. which Gene claimed had been struggling in the ratings. The comment that struck the nerves was when he called WWF a cottage industry and called TBS a multi-billion dollar conglomerate. Cottage industry is a term Vince McMahon has used for years as a derisive term for everyone else in the wrestling business. So I thought that was pretty interesting. I mean, if you think 3 years, if Gene was accurate, you're talking about from, you know, the end of 1990 till the end of, you know, mid-93 or so, that they were barely on speaking terms. I mean, Gene was pulling a lot of duty during those years. So, you know, who knows? At the time, Gene might have been bitter, and obviously they've made up since. But interesting. The stuff I never realized.
No, I didn't either, but I don't – the only thing that I'm kind of puzzled on is what kind of budget did Mean Gene expect from All American? It was a chop shop house show. I mean, like,
yeah,
what,
I don't know.
What did he want? A live audience? I mean, it was not nothing, but it was a harmless weekend highlight show. I mean, I don't know what the hell he was looking for, but I don't know.
He might have just been bitter. I mean, Wiki states that, well, I guess Gene has actually said in a shoot interview that he could have renegotiated with WWF in late 93, but he was never actually offered a contract, so he went to WCW. So, I mean, you know, who knows?
I think he
could have just been bitter at the time and grinding an axe a little bit, or trying to drum up. I mean, I wouldn't put it past him be trying to drum up, you know, hotline revenue either.
Oh, it wouldn't surprise me. I don't know. I think Mean Gene left because Vince wanted to just have a younger looking product, to be honest with you.
I think it was more
mutual than anything else.
Right. And I'm sure I don't know if it was mutual. I'm sure he would have stayed if they offered him money, but he, I think he was probably just upset and just kind of trying to get some hits on his hotline. So, you know, I'm sure there was some animosity, but I doubt they barely spoke for 3 years. I mean, I think Vince would have turfed him if there was the reason. It's like Gene was a big draw that they needed to keep around.
But I mean, yeah, think about all the, you know, he did every event center. He did all the, you know, the pay-per-view reports and everything. I mean, come on.
Right, it's like podium interviews on Superstars and everything like that. So.
Yeah, I think a lot of that's, I think a lot of that's a little bit of, you know, Gene's overly tanned head. It's just from his, right, you know, from sitting in Pensacola diners, kind of spinning his wheels a little bit. But
anyway, I mean, yeah, that pretty much brings us back to this, where you could see maybe why he was included, and they were kind of mean to him in these, you know, basically make him to be a, you know, money grubbing huckster throughout all this.
Yeah, he should have been, you know, pinching 12-year-old women's butts.
Yes,
but as he would eventually on Nitro.
Yeah. Well, and they would do a lot of that stuff in these skits. They talk about the women's shoes, because that was going on a lot on Nitro with, you know, the women and Flair and Arn using the women's shoe to pin Hogan and all that stuff. So, you know, they were taking shots and they were using content that was airing on Nitro. So in their own little way, they were, you know, paying attention to the product and bashing it. But, you know, we'll talk more about these at WrestleMania, but they have now started in early January.
Yes. So, I mean, I guess I can understand. I just, obviously, Vince was not listening to any of his muckety mucks unless they were just too scared to say anything. But
I'm sure. And, you know, maybe a few, like, I'm sure a guy like Russo, who was all about pushing the envelope, and he was fairly new to the staff. He might not even been on the writing staff yet. He might have just been working on the magazine, but I'm sure there were guys that were pushing for it, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. It just seems so strange. But speaking of strange, we move on to our next match, our second title match of the evening, as the bad guy. At the moment, the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time, really,
yeah.
If you think about it. Razor Ramon defending his aforementioned Intercontinental Championship against Goldust.
And these two had quite the story going on.
Lately,
it seems Goldust has been trying to attract the attention of the Intercontinental Champion Razor Ramon. And man, has he ever. The Bizarre One's first declaration of affection came in the form of a gold letter at last month's In Your House. And Goldust has been showering the confused Razor with gifts ever since.
Wait, what's that box of flowers? Hey! Oh, no! That's a personal foul! Unnecessary roughness! What's he doing?
He wanted me to present you with this token of his appreciation for you. For you.
Wait a minute, hold on.
Looks up into a centerfold of sorts of gold dust. And
that usher better take off. Razor Ramon has had it. And who would?
Obviously, the gifts have begun to get on the bad guy's nerves, raising the question, what are Goldust's intentions? it became more evident that Razor was becoming more uncomfortable with each amorous approach. We began to wonder, is Goldust after the Intercontinental Champion, or is the object of his desire the Intercontinental Belt? Goldust's lips are anything but sealed, and the bad guy has gotten the message loud and clear. After the androgynous one unveiled a tattoo of his Latin lover's name last weekend on WWF Superstars, Razor absolutely snapped. The mad guy showed up unannounced at Monday Night Raw and delivered a message of his own. Escaped. One thing is clear, Razor Ramon has had enough of Goldust's uninvited advances. Tonight, has Goldust played his greatest role using Razor's...
Okay. And that brawl, if you'd ever seen it out there in PTB Nation, was tremendous. Razor jumping Goldust in the back at Raw, just beat the piss out of him up and down the hallway and then whips him through the door. And it was a really stiff attack. And this is where we're already talking about a lot of the hard-hitting action. And it was interesting to see a guy like Goldust, who'd be portrayed as a priss all this time, really getting into like this stiff, nasty brawl.
The only thing about that promo that gave me the creeps is, did Todd really say that the tattoo was of his Latin lover?
Yes, that was a bit much.
Did he really say that? No wonder Razor snapped. I would have. Jeez. Now,
good feud, though.
Oh, great feud. Very entertaining. Unfortunately, not everybody was totally thrilled about it. We have a debut on this evening, mm-hmm. and there was a reason why we had that debut. Why don't you let everyone know what that debut is?
Well, the debut would be Goldust's new valet, portrayed by his real-life wife, Terry Runnels. Her name is Marlena, although we don't find that out here. She's just known as the director. Mm-hmm. All this time it was obviously implied that Goldust was homosexual. Vince was getting some pressure from GLAAD and some parents, and he wanted to keep the edgy Goldust character, but he figured maybe if he threw a woman into the mix, he would get those from breathing down his back to back off a little bit. So he has Marlena accompany Goldust here, and it's clear that they're portraying him as more of a guy just using fucked up mind games than someone who's actually interested in any kind of relationship with the Razor Ramon. So
yes.
From here on out, Marlena would accompany Goldust over the next couple of years. So,
right. Now, before we start the match...
We should clarify, too. She was the former Alexandra Wright in WCW.
Yes, she was head of the York Foundation.
Mm-hmm. Alexandra York, not Wright.
Alexandra York, yeah. She was head of the York Foundation. She was the one that was with the glasses, that walked around with the laptop and all that. Yep. Okay, before we get to the match, I'll read this next piece for us. We were talking about this storyline and all of this... And this coincides with our topic a moment ago. This is a part of an interview that Scott Hall, a.k.a. Razor, did with the Torch's Wade Keller about this angle. This is all quoted from Razor himself. Quote, "Actually, when Vince pitched the Goldust angle to me, he was real conservative back then. They had a violence code, no chairs on TV. You couldn't say ass. You couldn't flip a guy off yet. You couldn't do any of that shit. Then all of a sudden he calls me into a meeting and he wants to do this homosexual angle. You got to remember, this is a long time ago. Remember, this is, late 1995. The way the business goes now, I, Scott Hall, should have just gone ahead with it, right? Plus, see, I had been around 3 or 4 years now. I had a little bit of stroke. I remember looking at Vince and going, so let me get this straight. We're doing a gay angle. He goes, I don't get it, Scott Hall. Plus, the heat was on 1-2-3 Kid. Kid and Sid had just fucked him out of the title. They wanted to work with, and then they wanted him to work with Goldust. Scott Hall says, I'll tell you what, Vince, I ain't comfortable with the gay angle. You want me to drop the belt to Goldust? No problem. I'll drop it to him, but I ain't working with him. That was my downfall with Vince. It was the first time I ever disagreed with him. Unquote. That's why I said to you earlier that I don't know if he was on the shithouse yet up until this point. The other guy that we'll talk about later, he might have been, because we'll delve more into it when we get to him mm-hmm. later on in the show, but clearly he was already pissed off. But I don't think that's probably what he told Razor too after the meeting. That's good. I get out. But I don't think up until this point, Razor seemed to be pretty good standing with the company, particularly he's, you know, part of the clique and Sean and all that stuff. I'm sure everything was fine.
Well, there would be more issues throughout February. Not only this, but obviously, back personal demon issues, drug history, and, you know, there'd be a drug suspension in February. And then, of course, the money came calling. So I don't know if this really had much to do with.
Well, then we had the infamous plane flight incident with Sonny and the plate.
All right. Well, that was actually, that didn't happen in the plane. I think that happened in.
It happened somewhere.
It happened in Germany, I think.
In Germany, so. But we'll get to that at the end. So anyway, let's talk about the match itself, which actually is very good. These two actually have pretty good chemistry together. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the match a lot. Obviously, you know, Razor and the Kid still had some issues. And that would lead up to this, where the Kid interferes. I think does he come off the top rope?
Yeah, he comes in and he hits a
spin kick.
Yeah, Goldust covers. And the match itself is okay, but, you know, early on there's a lot of posturing. Goldust is doing a lot of his, machinations. And at one point he, feels up Razor's chest as he does a go-by, you know, trying to get in Razor's head. And that's what it was really portrayed as. It was just a lot of mind games. And I thought it was an interesting take. Now, I liked the original concept for Goldust. I understand why they felt like they had to back off, but I thought the way they went was an acceptable change to do the mind games thing, where this guy's just this fucked up guy that likes to get in guys' heads to take advantage.
Yeah, and here the 1-2-3 Kid would help Razor out. He would hit the spin kick, get the 3 count, and we have a new World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion. For the second consecutive year, Razor would lose the title at the Royal Rumble. Last year,
he would never win it back.
And this time, this would be the end. His fourth reign would be his last reign. So Goldust is your new Intercontinental Champion. And were you surprised?
I can't really say I was too surprised. I mean, it was obviously he was getting a push, so. I guess. I mean, I was surprised maybe he was pushed to this level this quickly, but I think it was obvious that they were heading this way. So I can't say it was like a, you know, they played it off like a major upset, but I don't think it was that shocking.
Did you watch this live?
Yes. Yep.
You did? Okay. I didn't. I rented it. So.
This is one of the ones that I just watched with just me and my dad watched it.
Oh, I'm sure your dad was. I'm sure Tony was thrilled watching Goldust. Like, he's been a fly in the wall that conversation. By that point anyway.
Hulk Hogan, we're coming for you, nigga.
Oh, who's the guy with the paint? Gazzo, love him. So there you go, Goldust, your new Intercontinental Champion, and Razor has got something out for the Kid, and they will they'll finish things up.
Well, actually, we'll see more of that later tonight.
Yeah, that is true. Okay, we've got two things left, so why don't we take a break, and then we will get to our double main event. And for the first time, things are a little different in terms of formatics for the Rumble. Mm-hmm. We'll tell you why in a minute. But first, a word from our friends at WrestleChat.net. Because
promotional consideration paid for by the following.
How many pro wrestling news websites do you visit to get your daily news? 3, 4, maybe 5? Do yourself a favor and make that number 1. WrestleChat.net, the only professional wrestling news site that brings you all wrestling news all day long, and is home of the critically acclaimed Still Real to Us podcast, starring former CZW, ROH, and ECW announcer Eric Arjulo and the champ Jeff Peck. That's WrestleChat.net. WrestleChat, it's where it's at.
WrestleChat.net is your home for everything pro wrestling. All the news you know you need, WWE, Ring of Honor, TNA. They have an awesome message board. A lot of WrestleMania talk this past week. stuff about Extreme Rules, about Brock Lesnar, all sorts of stuff. Of course, it is also, as mentioned, as you heard, the home of the Still Real to Us podcast, the champ and his announcer, the Alberto Del Rio and Ricardo Rodriguez of podcasts. And, of course, while you're perusing the news, by the way, our news and notes segment, of course, on our weekly headline show, sponsored, of course, by WrestleChat.net. And while you're perusing the news, look to the right. You will see the PTB Gnome, proudly worn by Jordan Duncan. Click on it, and you'll go right to the Podbean page and look at our extensive, soon-to-be 119-episode archive. WrestleChat.net, it is indeed where it's at. And, my PIC, it is ironic that you are playing this music right now.
Well, why is that?
Because playing in the Event Center right now is an episode of Monday Nitro. And it is a very memorable episode of Monday Nitro. The date, August 4th, 1997. Do you know what happened on that evening?
Well, I do know one of the matches, and that is, of course, Lex Luger facing off against Hollywood Hulk Hogan, because it was the 100th episode of Nitro, correct?
That is correct. And, of course, Flexi Lexi, or as our man, who is that, Safazio calls him, Lex Cougar.
Yes.
Won the title that night.
Yes, and of course, that was a three-hour show, rare at the time. And if you wanted to see what was on that full three-hour show, Scott, is there some sort of website we could visit for that?
But of course there is, my PIC. It is the history of WWE.com, purveyed by our man, Graham Cawthon. You can look through all sorts of stuff. He's got all the Nitros there, and Raws, and everything else. All sorts of results, dating back to 1963 for your WWF results. And
right during your heyday, your prime.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, me and your dad, Gazzo. That's what we were watching. And, of course, WCW, Mid-Atlantic, ECW. And now, after 10 years, starting to get some Ring of Honor and TNA in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And some great columns and posters, all sorts of great stuff. And you know what? It wouldn't hurt. In fact, I did it earlier today because I hadn't done it in a while. Graham is a great guy, and he's one of our favorite people, and my PIC is going to tell you when you'll hear him again on this show. But, you know, it costs some money for him to run that site, so if you have a couple of extra dollars on the side, why don't you click on to the left? You could pay on PayPal, your credit card, throw a couple of dollars Graham's way. It helps him out with the site, and he gives a lot to us here in the IWC, the Internet Wrestling Community. Wouldn't hurt to throw a couple of dollars his way if you ever get the time. He would greatly appreciate it.
Right, and he will tell you about that appreciation for the money we give him in all things wrestling next Thursday, April 12th, because he will be joining us right here on the Place to Be podcast as we interview the great Gary Michael Capetta. Capetta, of course, was the ring announcer for the WWF into the WWF transition, also with WCW, AWA, and most recently Ring of Honor. So please, we have the topic pinned to the top of the Facebook page, the Place to Be podcast, and you can go ahead and submit any questions you have for Mr. Capetta. Graham will be driving that interview, and yourself and me will be chipping in with some questions as well. So we're really looking forward to that. That's next Thursday, and you can listen to that, of course, on Podbean, iTunes, or through Stitcher Radio. If you go to Stitcher.com, you can listen to it right online, right there. You can download the app for your mobile device, for your iPad. And the great thing about that as well is the last 10 episodes streaming on there. So if you haven't caught up and you haven't had a chance to download them, you can listen to them streaming right there through your mobile device. If you don't feel like downloading it or you don't have the space on your iPod, you can stream it as well. So please visit us at Stitcher.com to search for Place to Be Podcast or P2B, and we should be the one and only appearance on that list. So thank you.
Incidentally, this Nitro episode started while we were talking about Razor.
You have to do it during the little bridge, and that's it.
Oh, that's it? Okay. My point was that the Hogan and Bischoff promo is still going on.
Of course.
That opened the show. It's been, what, 20 minutes? So, anyway, there you go. All right, but we're not talking about
what
Nitro.
Kind of disgusting, despicable.
Well, I don't know, but you had a title shot here, so stop crying, Billy, what's his name? Okay, but we're not talking about Nitro. Not tonight. Talking about the 1996 Royal Rumble. Speaking of, that's where we're at right now. Yes, for the first time in WWF history.
Well, not completely.
Well,
we're talking 1988.
Yeah, well, nobody remembers that one anyway. incidentally, on a side note, I might as well say it. I thought you were going to post it. When I sent you the picture earlier tonight, I thought you were going to post it on the Facebook page. But I did finally find Hacksaw Jim Duggan's book. It's about 14 pages and has a lot of pictures. I put it in the I put it in the kids section. It was a little wet. It must have been drooled on. I don't know. Anyway, but for the first time in the pay-per-view run, the Royal Rumble is not the last match. It's actually right now.
I remember being shocked at the time. It was actually pretty upset. I used to take things like that very seriously, and I remember being pretty pissed off that it wasn't last. I felt like it would hurt the quality of the match for some reason, but I was wrong. It was fine. And also a big change this year is that the entrance music would now be played for every entrant, not just the first two.
And that's awesome, because that adds to the...
Oh, definitely. I can't believe it took them that long to do it, honestly.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe they try to save time or whatever, but this Rumble is actually not that long. Not as long as past.
No, I think they were closer to a minute and a half than 2 minutes for this one.
Yeah, this is when you tried to guess if the durations in the middle were the exact, and then they just never were.
Right.
As you go through time. Okay, let's go 1 through 30. Of course, the winner. Well, yeah, he won. Good night, folks. No, I'm just kidding.
He won your heart. That's about it.
Well, he always does. The winner of this match would, of course, get the World Championship match in just over 2 months, March 31st, at the Pond. So Hunter Hearst Helmsley is at number one, courtesy of losing to Duke the Dumpster Drosy at the free-for-all match. Okay, thank you. At number two is the guy that he lost to at the previous month's pay-per-view. Oh, no, he beat him. I always do that. The guy that he beat at the previous month's pay-per-view, but then almost gave him some kind of viral infection.
A lot worse than the one you would have given him.
Oh! See, you're not as tired as you think you are. Henry...
That's autopilot, Orpheus. My friend.
Henry Orpheus Godwin.
Yes, very good. Very good.
Thank you. See, I'm on the ball, too. At number two. Number three, one of your favorites, who was not your partner at the Survivor Series.
Young man.
Indeed, Bob Backlund. Had already lost the presidential, or though he would do it in earnest that year, because obviously 1996 was an election year. So
it was good to see Mr. Backlund in the Rumble. I was very excited. Always, of course, he comes out to hail the chief. Very cool.
Yes. And, got to give Backlund credit. Guy stays in shape, still looks good, still as crazy as ever, and highly entertaining, so. At number four is the guy who's obviously not commentating tonight because he's here, and that is the King, Jerry Lawler.
And he would come in and go for Henry Godwin's slop bucket in the corner, trying to get rid of it, and Henry would end up getting it and slopping Lawler, and the slop would go all over the place. So kind of messy.
It was very messy. At number five, another one of your favorites.
Yeah.
Sparky Plug, Bob Holly. And at number six,
his last appearance.
That's right. Got to play it. Come on.
Okay, it's a Mabel medley.
I think we should have a contest to see which song is more ridiculous. yes, there he is. The King, our candy girl. Big Bad Mabel.
The once and future king. His main event run pretty much came to an end on the 1-1 aforementioned before New Year's Day Raw when he was squashed by Diesel in like 3 seconds. So.
Yeah, and that was it. So, considering what, 7 months earlier... almost 7 months earlier, the guy was on top of the world and on our hearts. Now he's on top of nothing. He's in line. He's in line at the Ponderosa or the Sizzler. So we shall miss you, Mabel. Mm-hmm. We will see him again. I don't know. 2.5 years, something like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He returns in mid-'98.
Mid-'98. Yeah. 2.5 years. So see you later, Candy Girl. I'm gonna miss playing that for a while.
I don't do any tricks.
You have no music. Nobody cares what you think. I'm gonna miss Candy Girl. You're not a Candy Girl, Mr. Stamp. That's for sure. All right, number 7. How about this? Big return here. Big return at number 7, sir.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, number 7. You in the mood for chocolate?
I don't know, man. I don't know. She just acts real funky.
You shouldn't be worried about anything funky. You're on. Wake up.
What the hell is this shit? Chocolate or something on?
Well, Dory, you're on. Get in. Good Lord. What a bum. Anyway.
I was very excited for this return. I will say that at the time. Mm.
Yes. Of course, we are talking about the great Jake the Snake Roberts making his big return. We last saw him get tombstoned on the floor at the Hoosier Dome in Indianapolis by The Undertaker at WrestleMania 8. Since then, he went later that year to WCW.
Mm-hmm. Quick run.
Yeah, very quick run. He actually showed up at the Bash? No, because I just watched the 92 Bash and he wasn't there. He showed up at something and then would eventually face a Sting at Halloween Havoc that year in a coal miner's glove match, and then he got bit by his own or some nonsense.
Right.
A couple years later, he would end up being in Smoky Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And he would take on Tony Anthony, the Dirty White Boy, and became the Smoky Mountain Heavyweight Champion. That was, I don't remember the exact date, May or June of 94.
It's on his DVD, Jake's DVD.
Yeah, May or June of 94, which, by the way, is a good DVD. Pick it up. You can get it cheap now. It's been a few years. Great documentary. Kind of depressing, but it is Jake. But it's a good story, though. You want to talk about a guy that had a fucked up childhood.
Yes.
With all the documentaries that have ever been put on DVD – about people's lives. That one's pretty much the most fucked up.
Right, and you see a lot of it in Beyond the Mat, too, which someday we're finally going to review.
Yes, top of some other boatload of other stuff. I think we might have to start with, since it is coming out fresh on DVD, the awesome No Holds Barred. Mm-hmm. But we will do Beyond the Mat. Beyond the Mat will be interesting.
Yeah.
Because that's not a movie. That's an interesting documentary. Speaking of, we'll get to talk about that another day. There's another documentary I've been interested about that I've been looking forward to watching again, but I don't know if they'll ever air it. The one that was on MTV with Tony Atlas and all that in it.
My cell phone hiding my money in my clock.
Yeah. No, poor schmuck. Okay. So Jay comes in at number 7. At number 8, we have another return.
And I just want to mention, too, Jake has a new snake, Revelations.
Yes.
The snake is white.
Yeah, it's like whitish.
Yellowish.
Yeah, like whitish gold. Yeah, gold. Yeah.
Yeah, so I was happy. Like I said, I was happy to see him back. It was cool. And definitely unexpected when they announced him coming back. This is his first appearance. So I remember our friend Jim was really excited because, of course, anything from the Federation years thrills him to no end. So
yes, exactly. So at number 8, another guy that is making his return from his short stint in the Federation years, and that is the former Haas, now using real name Dory Funk, who had that really awful.
That didn't surprise me a bit because Lou Albano is a big, fat, sloppy pig.
But Sonny is not, and she had just as many tag team champions as he did. So, Dory Funk, not a big, fat, sloppy pig, but a really bad, bald mullet. That was awful. Why didn't you just shave his head? Who was the dumb one that told him not to do that? Come on,
yeah,
Terry.
It was pretty rough.
It was pretty awful. So he comes in at number 8. At number 9, still heel, but teetering. Now we could say future Hall of Famer, Yakavuma.
Yes.
Yokozuna, of course.
Still a heel here.
Still a heel. But as time progresses over the next few weeks, things start to kind of shift a little bit. We'll get more into that in the next vault. At number 10.
And he's still with Camp Cornette.
And he is still, yes. Yes. Which ends up becoming like one of my guilty pleasures of 1996, Camp Cornette.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. And number 10, guy who's already been on camera tonight, and is the guy that cost Razor Ramon his Intercontinental title, the 1-2-3 kid. Still in the million-dollar corporation, I guess, right? Yeah.
And at one point in here, Razor would come out and try to attack him, and Kid would dodge him, and Razor would get jumped and dragged off by officials. So, yeah, he tries to get some revenge here, but Kid would hang on. Mm.
At number 11, a visitor from the...
the Orient. That's where they're all from.
Exactly. The Orient. The Oriental Champions. He is not related to Fred Katow.
Of course, used the Orient Express music.
As, why wouldn't he?
Most Orientals would.
Yes. But a guy by the name of Takao Omori. Yes. I don't know anything about him.
Well, he started in All Japan Pro Wrestling in 1992, and he was there through 2000. So obviously he just ventured over to the Rumble for a one-time appearance. And from there he'd wrestle for Pro Wrestling Noah, Excursion, World Japan, Pro Wrestling 01, New Japan. And now he just kind of semi-retired freelance is still going to this day. So,
oh, good for him. And he
kind of pointless here, though. I mean, they could have found anyone else.
How much did he actually pay to? Did they pay the guy to come here and hang out for a few minutes?
Odd choices.
Yes. At number 12, guy who debuted in '95 and kind of still has, you know, floating around having a job, and that is Savio Vega.
Yeah, still still a face, still kind of hanging around.
Yep. Would hook up with a big feud in a couple months.
Yes.
I'll tell you. And, we'll get to that other guy in a little bit. At number 13, though.
One of the best theme songs.
Oh, and I was absolutely marking out at this. I was a huge, huge fan of this guy in WCW. Of course, we are talking about, anytime you hear the term Mastodon, there's only one guy that goes along with that name. And that is, of course, Big Leon White, a.k.a. Who's the Man? Vader.
And also on that infamous 1/1/96 Raw was the first announcement.
Jacked up show, huh?
Yeah, yeah. They came out firing at that episode. I remember that one fresh. I was like, all of a sudden, like all these things were coming left and right. Like, holy shit, what the hell's going on? So, yeah, they revealed that he was coming. Not only just coming to the WWF, they announced that he'd be inside the Royal Rumble match. So, you know, came out of nowhere. Vader, of course. Hang on, I want to make sure I get everything right. All right, so he started as obviously a standout football player at the University of Colorado, started his wrestling career overseas in the late 80s, won titles in CWA and New Japan Pro Wrestling. He would work in AWA as a job guy as well during that when he was cutting his teeth. He ventured to WCW in 1990, became a nasty, overpowering heel managed by Harley Race, started off, of course, as Big Van Vader, and he had that big smoking helmet, and then he eventually would lose that, but... had a tremendous feud in some of the best matches in WCW history with Sting in 1992. Defeated him on July 12th to win the world title. And he would battle both Sting and Ron Simmons for that title over the next year or two. Starrcade 93, he lost the title to Ric Flair in a very infamous match where Flair's career was on the line. He then battled such foes as The Boss and Jim Duggan. And speaking of The Boss, you watched a couple of those matches recently, correct?
I did. I was watching our old... Our old Desert Island draft, and you actually had on your draft list Vader versus The Boss from Spring Stampede 94. And in the event center earlier this week, I had Vader's win over Sting from the 92 Bash. So
cool. Yeah.
Awesome guy. He was we've had a lot of over the times that we've been doing our reviews. Guys like Andre and, you know, like Boss, you know, Akeem and these other guys. But he was just the poster child for a legitimate monster heel.
Right.
I mean, he was the man when it came to just being an absolute son. And he was, in my opinion, I've said this to other guys, he is the modern day Stan Hansen in the sense that he just is so unbelievably stiff. I mean, he'd tell you immediately, apparently he'd say, you know, I am going to go all the way on you. And he would, he would potato guys left and right and just put, I mean, he'd had some brawls. Speaking of Stan Hansen, I think he had an infamous brawl with him in Japan. The two of them just pummeled the shit out of each other. That's the kind of guy, that's how Vader worked. And that's why a lot of his matches in WCW were so good.
Right.
Because he dealt with, I mean, you know, the master $2 steak is his manager, Harley Race. I mean, there's a guy you want to work with if you want to make your match look realistic.
Mm-hmm.
So I was all sorts of excited knowing he was coming to the WWF because that was the kind of guy Vince needed. He did a, a legit just powerhouse son of a bitch. I mean, it was perfect.
Oh, yeah. And he starts off on fire. These first two matches, but just to finish off his bio, of course, he had that great feud with Cactus Jack where the infamous powerbomb where he knocked Jack Silly on the floor into 94. Like we said, he feuded with The Boss and Jim Duggan. In 1995, Dawn and Hulk Hogan had arrived. They had a feud over the world title, but he's made to look kind of foolish as Hogan basically no-sold his offense or would even kick out of his powerbomb that had been, you know, set up as being a deadly maneuver 2 years earlier. So after that quick feud, he actually started to turn face as summer ended of 1995, and he was set to be on the Fall Brawl team with Hulk Hogan. Unfortunately for Vader, backstage, he got into a fight with Paul Orndorff, altercation, and he was actually suspended and given some time off. And I listened to an interview with him recently, and he made it seem like he had the option to come back, and then things kind of fell apart, and he left. And heading into 96, obviously, they announced that he would debut here in the Rumble. So
he obviously didn't have a lot of time to... he didn't have to. I guess there was no competes or anything, huh? Because he didn't have to wait very long. I mean,
right,
Fall
well,
Brawl
yeah.
was.
Yeah, I guess not.
Yeah, I guess Fall Brawl was September or whatever. I guess October-ish, heading into Halloween Havoc.
Well,
he
could have had a 3-month no compete. I mean, he doesn't debut till the Rumble, so.
Oh, that's true. He was just mentioned. Okay, yeah. that makes sense.
And
okay.
Like the only video footage they showed was like him like working out, and stuff like that. So they. You know, we'll see as we get into the next couple of shows, but he actually had an injury that he has since said he wished he took the time to heal up before debuting because he would immediately have to take some time off. We'll get to that at our next show.
Yes. So he comes in at number 13. At number 14, another import from USWA.
Yeah. I don't know if it was just a thin roster at this point or what, but they brought in some weird guys.
Yes. We're speaking, of course, of Doug Gilbert, who, by the way, in a kind of a cool, we were talking about this earlier about, you know, going to these cool shows. He won this spot in the Rumble at a USWA show, which is actually very cool.
Yeah, neat.
So, yeah. The next two guys are not neat. And these two, both of these guys are part of the Matt Rotellis Silverback fan club.
All the big, fat, sloppy pigs are also part of the Derek LaRue lineage.
Yes, pretty much. We are talking, of course, about the squat team. No, not the Samoan SWAT team. They're cool. But the squat team, which were these two ridiculously fat guys wearing Iron Sheik boots with black and white makeup on their face.
Right, but well known in Puerto Rico, the Headhunters, yes. Puerto Rico and Japan. So they actually were pretty good workers for guys their size. But they don't really put them over much or anything like that. They just kind of, you know.
Would they be at other shows? Like, would they be on Superstars and stuff? Was this like the only time you saw them and that was it?
I don't remember this being their only. I'm pretty sure this is their only appearance during this run. They'll pop back up in what, like 98 or 97 on Raw with Cornette?
Was it really?
Yeah, only for like a 2-week stretch. But this is it for this run for 1996. This is their only appearance. So again, more weird imports that they brought in for the Rumble.
Interesting. Yeah, very, very. But the roster was, he must have been like in between guys. Because they're really a lot of interesting people in here. Coming up at number 17, so they're 15 and 16, number 1 and number 2, the Santiago brothers. I guess they were related, I would think. They looked alike. I would think so. There's two different guys named Santiago.
Get the Santiago brothers up here for the Rumble. We need them.
Yeah. Call them squats. At number 17,
they obviously can't do any.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. At number 17, current Camp Cornette member, The Rocket, Owen Hart, the King of Hearts. At number 18.
Hey, BTB Nation. It is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan Update.
In January 1996, Jim Duggan did not have much going on. He defeated Big Bubba on the WCW Pro 1696. And he interfered in a match with Big Bubba and Arn Anderson on the 120 Saturday night, and that was it.
Now, the guy that's at number 18 is not going to be happy that you cut him off so he, so we can talk about two worthless outshow matches.
Please read us an excerpt from his book, please.
Okay. So I was on the Jersey Turnpike, and I sold out the Iron Sheik and kept my job. Pretty much the whole book should be. Anyway, so there you go.
Oh yeah, that's it. You're ending it. Okay.
That's it. Nah, I don't care. I didn't open the thing up. I just looked at the cover, sent it to you, and put it in the kids section next to the I don't know, with some section with Barbie or something. I don't know. They look alike. So, Ken and Duggan. So there you go. There was actually only two copies. I don't know how many. I didn't even realize the book was out yet. They haven't made a thing about it on. I don't know. Is it like was it independently written, or is this one of these WWE books?
I doubt it was independently written on any level.
Yeah, well, if it was independently written, it'd be written with a Sharpie, so with stick figures in it. So, okay, enough of him. And number 18, guy trying to make his big comeback after a tough end of 1995, having to forfeit the Intercontinental Championship in October, and that is, of course, the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. Shawn has not wrestled.
Right.
He wrestled in the wild card match.
Wild card boot match. And then the next night he wrestled he lost Owen Hart, and he has not been in the ring since.
Yeah, he had the infamous Owen Hart match where he collapsed, and we haven't seen him since.
Right. And they had
he has been off camera, right? He just wasn't wrestling.
Yeah, he wasn't really in the arena at all. He was pretty much off camera. They just did a lot of updates with his doctors and stuff like that, saying, will he be ready to compete? And, you know, is he going to be healthy? Is he going to get concussed again? So that was still a heavy storyline heading in here. And I'm not sure. I don't think he was on TV, really, outside of just, like, you know, vignettes and things building up to this.
Okay. So it's a big big return.
Yep.
Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels. And comes in at number 18. At number 19, I just realized that he was still with the company. They should have made him in Omari tag team partners.
Why? Because all the Orientals have to be together?
Well, duh, of course. And then they could use that music again. They were both using the same theme anyway, right? So we're talking, of course, about Hakushi came in at number 19. Yeah, right? He was using the same music. So why not? Just to consolidate them. Yeah, put the Orientals together. anyway, okay. So he comes in at number 19. And number 20.
Another guy putting around still. What I was saying when I was saying all the dead wood that would be cleared out over the next few weeks. These two guys, and I hate to consider Hakushi dead wood, but just based on booking, he pretty much was at this point. So these are two of the guys that were going to be flushed out as weeks went on here.
Yes. Number 20 being Tatanka. Tatanka. Let's put that Indian guy in there too.
And this is his actual last pay-per-view appearance for a while.
It is, yes. So we didn't do a record for him, did we?
Well, no, he'll be. I mean, we're going to see him a few times anyway as the year's going.
That is true. So he comes in at number 20. And number 21, is this a debut? I believe it is, right?
So apparently, I wasn't really aware of this. After Tatanka left, he cited a family and spiritual issues. And WCW apparently offered him a lucrative deal, but Chavez declined. Continued to appear for independent promotions, which allowed him to wrestle while maintaining a lighter schedule.
Wow. Wonder if he would have stayed an Indian. Wonder what Bischoff would have turned him into. God only knows.
I don't want to know.
I don't even want to fathom that. Hogan to make him something. I don't know. Number 21.
Yes, 21.
21.
Oh,
we have
a debut. We've seen him before, haven't we?
Has he been on?
Yeah, he was in last year's Rumble, wasn't he?
Sorry, I lost my place here. At number 21 is the Portuguese Man of War, Aldo Montoya.
Yeah, we've definitely seen him before.
Yeah, we definitely talked about him. Okay. At number 22, and this is where things really get interesting. He was our former world champion. Now he's just a grizzled, pissed off son of a bitch. And that is Big Daddy Cool Diesel comes in at number 22. Now, we were talking about people that are, you know, on the shit list. I don't think Scott Hall was quite yet. I bet you Kevin Nash, Big Daddy Cool, probably was at this point.
I don't think so, though, because he gets a really good push over these next couple of months. So I don't think so. I disagree with you.
Well, no, you're the one who said that there were a couple of guys that – well, you said earlier that
– I know, but then I backtracked. I said, well, probably not yet.
Okay. Well, I thought you were talking about just Scott Hall, but yeah, probably not yet. So
yeah, because he gets a pretty good push, and you know, I've always liked this Rumble, and I think it's a good field of competitors. But when you really look at legitimate contenders at this point left in the match, it's really him and Sean were the clear, you know, the two guys who you could see winning this. And I think it was fairly obvious, but I think Diesel still posed a threat. Now, we haven't really talked about many of the eliminations, but let's just backtrack quickly and talk about Vader. He comes in, wipes a bunch of guys out. And him and Yokozuna are battling, and Cornette's flipping out on the outside because his two behemoths are brawling on the ropes when they should be focusing on winning the Rumble. Sean comes up and dumps both of them out. So Vader's kind of tossed, and he does so in a way where he's not really hurt or his heat's not affected at all because Sean kind of hits him from behind. Vader comes back into the ring and presses him, Sean, out to the floor. So adding a little bit more doubt into whether Sean can continue on. So that's why I just wanted to take a minute and talk about Vader's elimination. From here on out, the rest of the eliminations were all previous to this, we're all pretty standard. Nothing crazy going on.
So this was the rule where if you were eliminated and you got thrown out, it didn't count.
Yes. Well, no. Yeah. Didn't count. Yep.
So okay. I just want to make sure of that. Because the way you said it, I want to make that Sean got, you know, he got thrown out, but because of the guy who was already eliminated.
Yeah, he just got thrown to the floor.
This year it doesn't count. Other years it counts. This year it doesn't count.
Right.
Okay. At number 23, another member of the Million Dollar Corporation. And that is the Supreme Fighting Machine, Kama.
Yep, making his final appearance in this gimmick. Mm-hmm. He'll be back in mid-97 under a new guise.
Yes. All right, at number 24.
The Million Dollar Champion.
For the entire year of 1995, I have searched and searched and searched in hopes that I could find someone who would exemplify what I feel a Million Dollar Champion should be. But I searched in vain.
That's some belt.
And in frustration until finally, Brother Love, I have found him. So without any further ado,
who is it?
I give you the Ringmaster. Champion and ringmaster, right here in front of everybody, I want to officially crown you my Million Dollar Champion.
Behold, brothers and sisters, behold the Million Dollar Champion, Brother Ringmaster.
That belt would rival a crown.
I'm gonna go out on a limb here, man. Back up a little bit, brother. Everybody out there in TV land, I'm going to give you a chance to be somebody. Come on, get the camera on that hand right there. I want everybody out there in TV land to touch your screen and feel what it's like to be destined for success.
Go ahead, Jane. I got it
feel
up there.
Feel what it's like to be born a champion, man.
You better put your hand up there, McMahon.
I didn't come out here just to run my mouth, Brother Love. I'm here to prove every single thing I say. Me and the Million Dollar Man talk. I'm in the Royal Rumble, man. I'm going to prove how good the Ringmaster is. After I toss every single one of the WWF superstars over that rope right there, man, I'll be the one getting the shot at the World Wrestling Federation Championship. It doesn't mean anything compared to the Million Dollar Belt, of course. But in WrestleMania, man, I'm going to do it all, and you're going to see what the Million Dollar Man and the Million Dollar Champ are going to accomplish. And then I'll have every single thing that I want out of the WWF. And why is that?
Because everybody's got a price for the Million Dollar Man.
Man.
Good to see Brother Love back in the fold.
Yes. The voice very familiar, isn't it? The moment has finally arrived for this one. Born in 1964 in Victoria, Texas, but eventually moved to Edna.
Edna?
Steve Anderson would be the name he's born with, but then it would change to Steve Williams because his mother remarried and he took his stepfather's name. Wrestling fan from the early days. When he was a teenager, he played football and watched wrestling. Eventually, he would see an ad for a camp or a wrestling school run by world-class superstar gentleman Chris Adams. Would go to that school and would start out in world-class as pretty much a low-level mid-card guy. Not even a jobber, really. Would go on to Memphis, bounce around a little bit, would be in the finals of a tournament for the vacant USWA Southern Heavyweight title. He'd lose to Jeff Jarrett. Then he would, in 1992...
What you did, you little jerk!
Excuse me? Don't say anything to him. Because... And no, promotional consideration is not paid for by the following. He would leave Memphis, head to WCW as... Stunning Steve Austin. Debut with his girlfriend, future wife, Lady Blossom. He would immediately, I mean, and here's a guy who didn't even have to toil that long. He'd head to WCW and immediately join the Dangerous Alliance, pretty much. And he would win the TV title and the U.S. heavyweight title in WCW. However, when WCW had that great renaissance, 1993-1994, everything was great. And then, as expected, WCW be infected with the Orange Goblin. And everything fell to pieces for the Stunning One. He would lose the U.S. title to somebody in about 30 seconds. And then he would get injured in the spring of 1995. The Stunning One would be fired via FedEx by Eric Bischoff.
Coming up, the contestants get schooled on the basketball court by the most unlikely opponents.
Man's just playing basketball.
That's probably what he was doing while he was... At first, I know you're playing with this weird music. in any event, he would... oh, God. And then Booker had like a little Booker midget. That was pretty funny. Okay. So he would be fired by FedEx by Eric Bischoff in WCW. Would futz around for a couple months. And then in the fall of 1995, he would show up in... Paul Heyman's basement, cutting promos while his mom was ironing, ripping WCW for firing him. He would rip your boy Dusty, among and Hogan and some others. Of course, Austin would have those awesome Monday Night Quill where the big boys play with each other promos, cutting promos while guys are taking a piss behind him at 4 o'clock in the morning. It's one thing I loved about those ECW promos: guys be taking a dump in the bathroom, and there's a camera there, and a guy's cutting a promo in a chair. The guy's wiping his ass. It was just so funny. It made ECW great. It was just so like random and weird. But anyway, and Austin would say that those promos were cut at 4 o'clock in the morning. But he would rip WCW, and he would actually get into a mini feud with then ECW champion Mikey Whipwreck, as well as the Sandman. And they would end up having a couple of triple threat matches for the ECW title. He would come out to the unbelievably awesome Superstar from Jesus Christ Superstar, wearing the tights that said Superstar and the orange tank top. Catch the eye of Vince McMahon. Would leave ECW. Would debut on the 1-8 Raw, and that is the clip you just heard. And then the following week on January 15th on Raw, right before the Rumble, he defeated a young Matt Hardy in his in-ring debut. But he is not called Steve Austin. He is simply called the Ringmaster, complete with green tights and peach fuzz hair. Not completely bald.
Correct.
I was very excited to see him. I was a huge fan of him when he was Stunning in WCW. Great wrestler. Kind of got pseudo-dicked around, but... had a chance to really shine in mm-hmm. the company. And there, of course, are rumors that Ric Flair was ready to groom him as the next WCW champion. And then we all know what happened there. The
yep.
Orange Goblin fell to pieces. So
Yeah, big debut here. Another guy that they pilfered from WCW that had been turfed, and a guy that they saw a lot of potential in, and you know, the potential would be a little mismanaged over these first few months, but things would pick up, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I would think so too. So he comes in at number
24.
No, sorry, I was looking at another.
I know you weren't fully invested in WWF at this time, but what were your thoughts? Like, were you aware he was coming in, or did you see Raw when he debuted?
I saw Raw when he debuted. I actually remember watching Raw that night, and I'm like, wow, you know, the roster was, you know, I had just gotten a new job, so I was kind of settling in now. I didn't have to go job searching anymore, so I was kind of settled in and getting back into watching wrestling. I watched mostly WCW in 95. I have to admit, I was like those fans who kind of clamored to the old guys, definitely was getting excited. And I didn't see this Rumble live, but I rented it when it came out. Vader, and I have to admit, Vader and Austin coming in kind of, you know, swayed me to start watching WWF again. So, yeah, seeing those guys, because I was big fans of both those guys in WCW, and seeing them here got me very excited. So, and just to let you know, of course, it would not be the last time we would see some fresh faces. You will see a lot of fresh faces over the next few vaults, and the seeds being planted for the eventual renaissance. But anyway, we digress. We look far ahead. Anyway, the ringmaster came in at number 24. At number 25, the guy who...
This is one guy we can't pass over while talking about the Rumble.
He's enjoying his Seder meal tonight, is what he's doing. Of course, the great Barry Horowitz is... you know, I like the fact that his real name is Jim Horowitz. Did going from Jim to Barry make that big a difference in his career? I think Jimmy Horowitz would have been great. It's like Jimmy Dorito.
And Jimmy Watts.
Anyway, yes. Jimmy, exactly.
And this is his final pay-per-view appearance, of course. Came out of nowhere that he even got on pay-per-views in late 95, but he did. And, interesting push he received. One of my favorite lines from Mr. Perfect as he enters is, if the nerd wins Royal Rumble, I may actually come out of retirement. I like that one, so... this is it for Horowitz. I think he sticks around on camera a little bit, on TV, and then he actually goes to WCW. I think he does some job duty there.
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate because he's a highly entertaining guy at that point.
Another guy that was really, you know, with the talent that came in, that was coming in, it was clear that he's going to be phased out. And he's actually around into November, so he sticks around. And he actually picks up some wins on house shows here and there over guys similar to the card on him. So,
yeah. Okay, so at number 26, the man who makes a difference, complete with awesomely cool leather jacket, and that is, of course, Fatu. At number 27, the Fatu. Evil dentist, Fatu. Fatu! Or maybe Lord Alpha will call him Fatu! Number 27, the evil dentist, Isaac Yankum. Still putzing around.
Yes, I think this is his last appearance as Isaac Yankum.
As Isaac Yankum, yeah.
So another guy that was hanging around being filtered out.
Yes. At number 28, another guy putzing around. A lot of putzes arounds in this one. At number 28, Marty Jannetty. At number 29, not a guy putzing
around. Let me ask you this. I was actually thinking about this earlier today. I was listening to a discussion about Edge and Christian, and something popped in my mind. What do you think is the preferable method for a tag team where two guys splitting up? Do you think it's better to have guys like Edge and Christian where both would go on to very good careers, or a tag team like the Rockers where you have one mega star? Well, I guess Edge kind of turned out this way, but one mega star, Hall of Fame, all-timer, and one guy who does nothing. Like, what is the better, you know, in the Hartford Nation, obviously, similar to that, but... What do you think is the preferred result?
Well, I mean, it all depends on – a lot of it depends on seeing – I think a lot of it depends on when you're watching the team, which one has that it factor. Obviously, when you looked at the Hart Foundation, Brett had the it. When you looked at the Rockers, Sean had the it. But in Edge and Christian's case, it's weird because at the time, Edge didn't have it. Edge had to continue growing it before he became it. Whereas Christian, you know, ended up being a pretty solid mid-card guy. But Marty Jannetty never had that mid-card guy look. So I don't know. I mean, Marty Jannetty probably could have been something special if he, you know, had taken down the, put down the sauce. It all comes down to, in a situation like that, it all comes down to who just wants it more. And Sean wanted it bad from the very beginning.
Well, I'm not saying about that. I'm saying, what do you think is the better result? Like, would you rather have – it's almost like if you have, like, prospects going. My point is, if you're going to split up a tag team, do you think it was better to have two really good guys – both those guys end up doing really well for you, you know, and be long-term solid players, or you lose one guy along the way, but you end up with a megastar?
Probably end up with a megastar and then one guy that gets lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, I mean, right, you got to go that way, right?
Probably yeah, you got to go that way because, Edge, I mean, obviously Edge had an awesome career, but Sean had the career of careers. Let me ask you this. Is that what eventually happened to the Hollywood Blondes?
You mean more the Edge and Christian route or the other way?
Yeah. Well, kind of. It almost turned into both.
Yeah.
It was the Edge and Christian route, and then obviously we.
Yeah, exactly. I think if Pillman didn't pass away when he did, I think he would have had a career at least similar to Christian's. But, you know, maybe we'll save this for a headline show or something. We don't know.
Yeah, and the motorcycle.
Just kind of popped in my head when we talked about Jannetty. And him and Sean actually tussle here, I believe. So always keeping that feud alive.
Yeah, that's true. No, that's a good. No, that is just a very good question. No, that's actually a good. That's not one for tonight.
No, right.
But that is a good. That is a good. A good wheel spinner for a future. Maybe something we'll bring up to the Nation one night. That's interesting. I'd like to ask. I like Graham's opinion on that too. Very interesting. At number 29 is a guy who actually is a good example of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, of course, a red hot member of Camp Cornette, and that is the British Bulldog. He comes in at number 29, and of course, finally at number 30, the guy who won the free for all match. Duke the Dumpster Drosy.
Right. Now, your boy, Horace Helmsley, lasts the longest in this match at 48 minutes before Diesel finally tosses him near the end. Mm-hmm. The shortest in was one of the squat team members at 24 seconds. Shawn Michaels would end up tossing out 8 guys.
That's a lot. More than I remember.
Yeah, he had a good run here. This is his more dominant Rumble appearance. And we'd get down to the final four, and that would be Bulldog, Shawn. Final six would be Bulldog, Shawn, Yankum, Diesel, Drosy, and Kama. Yankum would go out, and then Drosy. So the final four was pretty strong. Shawn, Bulldog, Diesel, and Kama. So Diesel would toss Shawn would actually toss Bulldog out first. Diesel would dump out Kama. And as Diesel was fighting with Kama, Shawn comes up from behind, super kicks Diesel, and he falls out for Shawn to win the Rumble just under an hour. Diesel was very pissed off that Shawn kind of snuck out from behind and tossed him. So Shawn wins. He's heading to WrestleMania. He's obviously recovered from his concussion, and now we start the trek to fulfill the boyhood dream. That would become the major story over the next 2 months. As a Rumble itself, though, where do you see this one standing?
I mean, it's good. I mean, it's entertaining. I mean, I wouldn't put it in like there's ones better, but
right.
But I enjoy watching it though. Again, I agree with you from what you said earlier. I think perfect kind of helps the tell the story very well here. So one of the better Rumbles in terms of just entertaining. Kind of a unique, obviously a better crop of guys than a 95. I've got 95 was you know 30 Doug Gilberts, but this was good. Obviously Vader in there, and it was. The fact that there was a lot of underlying storylines going on, which always makes a Rumble entertaining. But I like this one. I could watch this one. I could watch this one again out of the blue if I wanted to. One of the shorter ones. It's one of the few Rumbles that actually goes under an hour. Again, because as we mentioned earlier, right. The in-between numbers.
It is a weird one because it seems like a majority of the guys in, weren't even with the promotion or were debuting and are fresh faces. So on that hand, it's like if you compare this to 95, it's such a different Rumble, you know, outside of the winner and Bulldog being one of the last guys. It's very, very different. And, I liked Perfect on commentary here. I thought he added a lot. And I thought they had some nice storylines woven throughout as well. And they made Vader look really, really strong, which I dug. So I like this Rumble. I love 96 as a whole, so you're not going to get much complaints from me as the year goes on. So
right.
This is definitely one I like to throw in and watch when I get some time to kill.
Yeah, no, I enjoy it too. Again, the commentary helps, and obviously Vader's debut and the Ringmaster. Mm-hmm. And there's guys in it that I had invested interest in, so that helps as well. So Shawn Michaels, the Heartbreak Kid, becomes indeed the second guy in history to win back-to-back Royal Rumbles. Hulk Hogan did it in 1990-1991. So HBK, who, by the way, super kicks his boy, Big Daddy Cool, to win it, moves on to he does have a bump along the – he does have an almost bump along the way, though, which we've never had before. We'll tell you why at our next show, because for the first time ever, we have a pay-per-view stop on the road to WrestleMania. But we'll get to that in a couple weeks. Okay, so Shawn Michaels, but we are not done with the show yet, folks. As mentioned, this is the first time in pay-per-view history that the Royal Rumble match is not last. And my man heading the West Warwick mafioso there, not pleased, but...
I got over it quick. Although, it's probably because I fell asleep.
Okay, here we go. Our final match is indeed our final title match of the evening. The World Wrestling Federation Championship is on the line as... Your champion, mentioned in the intro, the Hitman, Bret Hart, winning, of course, the title at Survivor Series and then keeping it at In Your House 5, taking on, in his first title match in exactly 2 years, the Dead Man.
Yes, and now this began, we talked about this briefly at our last show because this was announced at the end of the show. This starts his renaissance into being a main event player instead of a guy just fucking around with monsters that were thrown in his face to keep him busy.
Right.
So almost instead of just being an attraction, he now becomes a main player. And as he's coming to the ring, Diesel's still leaving, and they get into a little pushing match in the aisle, and then Diesel walks off. So, and also he's still wearing the, as Vince would call it in the match, the facial appliance, his Phantom of the Opera mask.
Only Vince could come up with something as stupid as that.
Put on the facial appliance. I'm coming in.
Yes. You know who should wear facial appliances? The Orientals.
Cover those eyes.
So he's wearing the Phantom of the Opera mask.
Mm-hmm.
And this match is an unbelievable 20, almost 28 and a half minutes.
Yeah, that's crazy time.
Long match.
I'm not sure why the Rumble was shortened and then these guys had to go a half hour. I mean, this could have went a little shorter, but like we said, they were really starting to put a focus on the athleticism and legitimate, you know, main events, putting a heavy focus on the world title. And, you know, they had a guy that could go in Bret. This match is one I really need to watch again because I always considered it to be boring. I remember at the time I did not like it. I thought it was boring. And I actually read a review of it recently that was putting some praise on it, saying it's not really as boring as its reputation holds. So I'm actually curious to go back and watch this one again just to see if it's actually better than I remember. Do you know, is it on Taker's DVD or anything? Or do I have to do it on
the tape? Let us check the history of WWE.com, and this match is on nothing.
Okay, so I'd have to take out the tape.
Go to the paper. Yeah, you'll take out the paper. I have the Coliseum video copy. I'll have to take the tape out. I actually graded this match fairly well.
Hmm.
Yeah, I actually graded this match pretty well. It was a little long. Maybe I would have graded it higher if it was maybe, 10 minutes shorter. But I don't totally hate this match. It's not that bad. It's not great. And a lot of people, this is one of the few times in his career that people accuse Bret of kind of, mailing it in. Pissed off that he was nothing more than a placeholder. But
That was definitely – and that was another thing Grant and I were talking about today. It was Bret's status at this time where – just a guy, exactly, a placeholder, and even as champion, feeling shunted into the background and kind of playing just a pawn in the Undertaker Diesel feud that was now burgeoning. So,
right.
To go a half hour and to close the show out and then have it be a DQ because Diesel comes in and interferes, just kind of bullshit. If they were going to do that, you could have done it earlier in the night, but I'm guessing the thinking was, well, we wanted Diesel to be pissed at coming off the Rumble and have to run in with Taker in the aisle. So I'm guessing that's why this was last, but that's a tough way to end the show.
It is a tough way to end the show. I don't think this could have very easily. Well, was the whole really for the was the reason to flip flop these matches was to make the Taker Diesel thing happen? Really, you think so? I'm not saying that you believe that, but what do you think?
I think part of it is they wanted to have the match last, put the world title match last. But I think a big part of it, was to set the stage for Diesel and Taker to have the run in and for him to come out and be pissed off about not winning the Rumble. I do think that was part of it. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think it, you and I think alike in a lot of ways involving, history and tradition and kind of just the way things need to be. The Rumble always needs to be last. But it works okay here if that's what's going to be done. But clearly Brett was not happy with the fact he was nothing more than the guy that could put on good matches and while everyone else gets to do the fun stuff. It seems like that's what it is. Mm-hmm. It's like almost fun not being champion. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So because of the run-in with Diesel, Taker actually wins the match by disqualification.
Right, but obviously quite pissed.
Yeah, but obviously quite pissed. 28-28, long match. But
I'd say I'd watch it when I go to bed tonight, but I don't think I'd make it very far into it.
I don't think you'd make it past Taker's intro. Yeah. But it's a good match, though. I like it. I like it. But yeah, I recommend we recommend PTB Nation. Pop it in sometime. Let us know what you think, if you think it's dreadfully dull or maybe you don't. I like it. It doesn't bore me.
Continuing though, the nice trend that we'll see throughout 96.
Oh, yes.
The show's wrapping up. Gorilla Monsoon saw what happened and felt Diesel maybe deserved his title rematch. So he sets the main event for In Your House is Brett versus Diesel in a steel cage. Mm. Of course, Diesel delivers his WWF runs on Diesel Power interview. That basically almost turns him heel. The one thing though, I wasn't crazy about when you really look at it. You think it kind of, you know, this is something that's talked about in current day wrestling, but is this something that really devalued the Rumble win by Shawn, where, yeah, he gets his Mania match, but Diesel's given a title shot anyway?
Well, I think a lot of it is, you know, having the title match at WrestleMania is a big deal. Having a title match anywhere else is not. Obviously, it was more like Brett is a fighting champion. And remember, Diesel technically never got his rematch. So really, no. In this instance, no, because, you know, Diesel was due his rematch from the Survivor Series he never got. So storyline-wise, no, it makes perfect sense. I mean, Diesel, they could have – what would have devalued Shawn's win is if they put Diesel in and made it a triple threat at WrestleMania.
Yeah, but Diesel lost to Rumble, and he still earns a title match before Shawn gets his. This is kind of odd. I don't know. I mean, they have to do it, obviously, but – I mean, I guess part of the allure was that you're getting the WrestleMania main event, especially then when it really was the main event and a big deal. So I guess that's part of the allure.
Yeah, that is. I think so. I don't think it's that bad. I mean, waiting 3 months for Diesel to get his rematch. Yeah, that kind of sounds a little far fetched. I would want mine pretty quickly, but it gives Shawn a chance, and Shawn ends up having to do something anyway at that show, and we'll get to that in our next vault. But. Mm-hmm. So there you go. There is your 1996 Royal Rumble. You and I graded it kind of down the middle. It's not a bad show. It's fairly standard. I wouldn't go crazy about it, but it's, you know. Would this be one, if you were just bored, you'd throw it in?
Yeah, and I think I did actually a while ago. It was on 24/7. I was watching it, I think, a few months ago. I want to say it was right before this year's Rumble. It was. I did. It wasn't on 24/7. I actually threw it on.
Okay.
I I'm a mark for anything 96. So
yeah, I agree. And 96 gets off to, we think, a pretty good start. Checking the history of WWE.com before we get to the feedback, there are none of the matches are on here. The only one that's on something, the Goldust Razor match, is on something called Confirmed Hits. I'm gonna click on that and see what it actually is quickly. Oh no, it's a Coliseum video. It says Confirmed Hits. And it's got Bulldog and Brett on the front. Looks like it's from the In Your House 5 match. Does it have the matches on it? Let's see. Here's what's on the card. Here's what's on the tape. Diesel versus Yoko for the title. Oh, interesting. Razor versus Goldust. That's the match from the Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
Brett Bulldog from In Your House 5. Taker Isaac Yankum. Interesting. And, how about this six-man tag? We might have to look for this tape. Brett, Savio, and Razor against Owen, Yoko, and Hakushi.
Wow, yeah, that is a cool match.
How about that, huh? And apparently from this guy saying on Amazon, the match is actually is really good. I'll have to look that up. Brett, Savio, Razor.
Interesting.
Anyway, the tape is called Confirmed Hits. Coliseum Video. Must have come out some point in mid-96. Interesting.
Well, they are confirmed hits, that's for sure.
Yeah, how about that six-man tag? What the dig for that? That sounds like a hidden gem. Well, that right up our alley. Okay. So there you go. There's your Royal Rumble. All right. We got a lot to go over, so why don't we just dive right in? We got a lot of them. Again, we thank PTB Nation. And we don't, you know, I know we were talking about long, but, I mean, we had this thread up for a while.
Well, so. but there's a lot of them, which we're fine with. But they have a lot of the nation has complied, and the comments are definitely not nearly as long. So we definitely thank you all for that.
Yes, thank you very much. I'll let you lead off. Go ahead.
Miguel Rojas. When I saw the Rumble match, I knew HBK was going to win. I think this is when Brett did not enjoy his third title reign because now he's stuck in the middle of the Undertaker-Diesel feud until next pay-per-view. By the way, I love the part where Diesel screws Undertaker and flips him the bird. That's right. We didn't mention that. That was great. That's also, what I remember about the Rumble is that Hunter Helmsley lasted the longest without having to eliminate anybody. Two memorable debuts, Steve Austin, known as the Ringmaster at first, and the very impactful debut of the man they call Veda.
Yes. Corey Ferreira. It's that time again. It's time for the Royal Rumble. The 1996 Royal Rumble kicks off with Ahmed Johnson taking on Double J Jeff Jarrett. The match is not good. They put Ahmed with these good workers on pay-per-view, and the matches aren't good. Next up, tag titles. The Smoking Guns defend against Skip and Zip. Pretty good tag match. I like both of these teams, and they had good in-ring chemistry together. Billy and Bart retain their belts. Goldust beats Razor Ramon to become the new IC title champ, or IC title. The one thing I remember of this feud is how much they played up the Goldust homosexual stuff. As for the match, it's good. Nothing too special. Now time for the Rumble. This match is all about Shawn Michaels. You knew going in HBK was coming out the winner. Something that is forgotten is that Helmsley gets the Iron Man of the match lasting 48 minutes, something of which is forgotten. As for the Rumble, Nash had a pretty good run taking out three guys. HBK destroys in it, as does the debuting Big Van Vader. Good job by WWF making him a monster in his debut. Okay, WWF title time. Bret Hart defends his title against The Undertaker in the title run Bret Hart hates. Honestly, the match is average for Bret match in the mid-90s. The match is memorable for the Diesel interference to set up Taker Diesel for Mania. We'll get to that later. In conclusion, the 96 Rumble is a meh show. Nothing stands out as great or bad, just a show despite being the Rumble. And he puts down Meltzer's grades. Ahmed Jarrett, 1.25. Guns, Skip and Zip, 2. Razor, Goldust, 2.75. Rumble, 2.5. Taker, Bret, 2.75.
Chris Knights. Sounds like a jobber from 1988. The Rumble match suffered due to the horrible lack of depth in the roster at this time. The guys that brought in to fill out the match, Doug Gilbert, Dory Funk, Omari, the Headhunters slash Squat team, meant nothing to me at the time. Two things I never get here as well. First, in the Rumble, in any Rumble before or since, if you go out over the top, you're eliminated. Doesn't matter if the guy who put you out wasn't in the match, who everyone Vader throws out should have stayed out. Second, the commentators couldn't tell the squad team apart when one was clearly wearing a nipple-revealing singlet, while the other was wearing a larger, more modest version. Sounds like something from the LaRue collection.
Yes.
Small quibbles aside, I enjoyed this show, and the WWF was right back on track after a horrible 1995.
The Doctor of Love himself. Michael McDonald. Of all the times to enforce the comment limit, it has to be a Rumble. And the first pay-per-view I saw on tape. Sorry, Michael. Ahmed vs. Jarrett was a decent opener. Ahmed flies around the ring due to his confusion of being from Mississippi instead of Mexico, and Jarrett seems disinterested. I'm sure it was meant to finish elsewhere, as Jarrett does appear on the next set of TV tapings, but then buggers off in his quest to make big dollars in strip-offs against Ric Flair. Tag match is good. I don't have much to comment on except for that intro vid by Sonny, one of those times a bubble bath has a visual downside. the Intercontinental title match. Or was it a case of how not to successfully demonstrate sexual harassment? Goldust slithers, rubs, and then slides his way into the championship. Slow match, but the difference here was that it helped tell the story properly. Razor is clearly creeped out and frustrated, and the kid interference costs him in the end. This is the point I begin to think of the kid as an annoying little shit. The Rumble. How can I put into words? Holly Hunter Michaels come out looking great. Aldo, Drosy, Hakushi, and Tatanka look like shit as far as perception as competitive wrestlers. Who the hell are Omari and Gilbert? That's great. Vader was going to look strong, as was Diesel, as he may not have decided to leave just yet. The rest of the guys were just there, really. Oh, and the squat team are two of the weirdest looking people ever. Short, pudgy guys with really retarded functioning legs. Taker versus Bret is average. However, this is a case of the Taker fighting bigger guys, bigger, slower, clumsier, and less talented than Bret. So it was clear culture shock for Taker to deal with it, and it shows. Despite my harshness, this event is a guilty pleasure for me. First pay-per-view I ever saw, so it holds a candle to my heart there. Okay.
Mike Wilkinson. I am not going to rehash each match. You guys have already done that. I was a huge Modib mark at the time. I feel bad for Bret as he's in the back seat. First Hogan, now Shawn Michaels. This show put Shawn Michaels over in what, to me, is the middle of the Royal Rumble match. This is one of the last pay-per-views I listened to through Scrabble TV. After this, I was jacked for a possible Bret-HBK match.
Okay. Wade Ferrari. It's kind of the same as Chris Knight's. They're like a tag team. Yes. A decent show overall. Nothing great, but nothing horrible either. Despite the weak lineup, the Rumble match was pretty good. There was a lot of departures and injuries at the time, so they had to get by with wrestlers from other promotions, as well as guys like Mabel, Kama, and Tatanka, who were all out of the door right after the show. Fortunately, several new talented wrestlers would be brought in to help fill out the roster, two of whom we see in the Rumble, Invader and that Ringmaster guy. Brett Taker was disappointing. It wasn't a bad match, just real long and kind of boring at times. I think the main reason for the match not being as good as it could have been was the fact that Taker wasn't used to wrestling long matches at this point in his career, which is true.
Ryan Schmock. Royal Rumble 96 was a fun event. Godwin, Hunter, Selmsy, and the free-for-all is a good way to kick off the pre-show. Ahmed Jarrett was okay. Guns versus Skip and Zip was okay as well. Ramon Goldust was very good. Kid cost his former friend the title and would continue their feud. Royal Rumble match. I read these guys were supposed to be in it. Avatar, he was also supposed to be on a Survivor Series team in 1995, but was replaced by Bob Holly. Buddy Landell, Bam Bam Bigelow, Dean Douglas, Dan Severn, Sabu, and the Ultimate Warrior. Wow, that's quite a list of... guys supposed to be in here. I guess some of them were make sense. And we did, I think we mentioned the Bigelow thing in Survivor Series that he was initially announced for this match.
Yes.
Kid and Sid were supposed to be in the tag title match. That's right. Did we mention that at In Your House 5? I think
yes,
we did.
Yeah,
they were supposed to fight the guns here as well. Also, Kama returns the bald head, though. I think he was supposed to return as Papa Shango. Perfect mentioning that he teamed with Eddie Gilbert when Doug Gilbert made his entrance was a bit of a surprise. Squad team get eliminated by Yoko and Vader. Vader goes nuts, and then HBK gets the win, eliminating his good friend. Undertaker finally gets a title match and wins, but does not get his title. Overall, a very good show to kick off 1996.
Jay Arsenio Di Amato. Mr. Perfect was underrated as a color commentator. He had some brain-like one-liners, especially during the Goldust Razor match. Jake the Snake's return and Godwin slopping Helmsley, Lawler, and Backlund were my favorite parts of the Rumble. Perfect said Backlund went to Princeton, Minnesota.
Jason Greenhouse. 1996, the first full year of the Monday Night Wars. The year would start off slow for WWF, but would get better. Scott, the moment has arrived. Enter Steve Austin's pay-per-view debut. I love the pop that Jake Roberts got when he came out. Shawn winning the Rumble is very predictable. I did, however, like the end of the match. The undercard was terrible. Marlena making her debut and Goldust getting a first taste of championship gold were about the only two highlights for me. There was definitely a change in the air, but all of the pieces weren't quite in their place yet.
Okay. The King, James Manda.
James Manda.
Yes. For once, I will try to keep my comments short. To start with, has anybody ever noticed how poor the sound quality was for this?
Yes. Yes, it was. And for a while, I thought I just screwed up. And, you know, if you didn't have the right mix back of the old cable boxes, you had to have the cable box volume at one level and the TV at another. And yeah. I thought I had the cable box overmodulated because my tape is, like, very loud like this is what it sounds like. So it... And then I've later seen that a lot of other people have the same issue. So
yeah, I don't remember if the Coliseum video has it like that. Anyway, I thought the Double J versus Ahmed Johnson was a disappointing match with a very cheap ending, but at least it was short. Ahmed's no-selling went to new lengths by taking a guitar shot to the head, but still managing to chase Double J back up the ramp. Smoking Guns versus the Body Donnas was a good, fast-paced contest, well worth a watch. Razor Ramon versus Goldust is not the easiest match to watch, as there is too much posturing to the crowd to allow it to flow. I also felt that Razor Ramon was well past his sell-by date, as his character never changed, so found him to be pretty boring. It was great to see people like Bob Backlund, Jake Roberts, and Dory Funk in the Rumble match. I've always wanted to see Carlos Colon make another appearance. I wonder what happened to that youngster. Got to feel sorry for the crowd, as they have to see quite a few unknown idiots entering the Rumble. Even Vince didn't sound convinced as he yells out, "That's right, they are identical twins." because we all know who the squad team are. The last 10 entrants into the Rumble are all shit, other than the British Bulldog and that Ringmaster guy, whoever he is. But I suppose the quality of the match doesn't matter too much, as Shawn wins and now is on the road to WrestleMania. Diesel must have had a sleeping bag down by the ring or something, because for some reason he's still there by the time The Undertaker comes down for his match. But it's okay, because he's apparently not afraid of the dark. It's amazing how during the whole event we haven't heard from the WWF champion Bret Hart, just goes to show how he was keeping the belt warm for that prick Shawn Michaels. The main event is okay, but just way too long and has a crappy finish, plus Taker is still a very slow-moving performer, which doesn't help. So overall, a decent event, but nothing more. Just a vehicle to make Shawn the number one contender. That comment wasn't any shorter, really, was it? That's all right. You are a king.
Yes. You can reign supreme over a place to be a nation. Tony Nagel, the opener between Jeff and Ahmed, had the best DQ ending ever. Boing.
Ashley Cruz. HBK repeats his Rumble winner. Will he finally hit the pay window at Mania? As Dusty Rhodes might say, yeah, they hit the pay window.
Can he go to the pay window?
He might. We shall see. Bret vs. Taker sucked. It was Bret Hart. It was like Bret didn't want to be there or something. Doug Gilbert in the Rumble? That guy was terrible in USWA.
Austin Favre. Mr. Favre. Pretty decent event. Jared Ahmed was a good opener. Tag match was decent. Razor's on his way out the door by giving Goldust the rub. In Goldust fashion, he loved the rub. Michaels goes back-to-back with the Rumble wins. If anyone thought the Garbage Man was going to win, it's legit crazy. Taker Brett was there, but the real story is apparently Diesel isn't afraid of the dark.
Our resident Braves fan, who's obviously not thrilled that my guys beat them yesterday, Jay Hinchy. Finally, into 1996, as the road to WrestleMania 12 starts with the Royal Rumble. Decent opener with Ahmed Johnson versus Jeff Jarrett with a guitar shot to Ahmed's dome for the DQ finish. Tag title match is not bad. I always liked the Smoking Guns and held the tag division together for the longest time. Icy title match with Razor Goldust is pretty good, with the shocking upset of Goldie winning the title thanks to the 1-2-3 kids screwing Ramon. The Rumble itself has its highlights with the debut of Vader, some guy named the Ringmaster, Hunter Hearst Helmsley lasting the longest, Jake the Snake throwing the snake on the King, who would then hide under the ring until Shawn found him, and Michaels winning it for the second year in a row. The WWF title match I liked with Brett Taker. The finish was fine, as it would set up the eventual Mania match between Undertaker and Diesel. So all in all, a solid start to 1996, and with WCW breathing down Vince's neck, he would begin to turn up the volume as the year progressed.
Brian Semek. Overall, a below-average show to kick off what hopes to be a better year following 1995. Decent IC title match. It's just a shame Razor didn't want to do the feud in longer, as I think it could have some legs given some more build. Once again, I hate Battle Royals or Royal Rumble matches, and this one was bad, but very cool to see the future of the WWF in the ring through Ringmaster and Hunter Helmsley, as well as the Headhunters called Squad Team. Why? Those guys could really go from what I saw in 1993 ECW in Puerto Rico. Finally, the WWF title match is bad. They tried, but never got going. Plus, it just seemed to be used to build another feud. Poor Brett's reign is starting to look like he was there for others to build off of.
I forgot that the Squad Team were in ECW. Totally forgot about that. Dave Hall, another boss from Down Under. The standard starts to rise as Vince puts on a much better show than last year's Rumble with the debuts of Vader and a young superstar with ambitions. HBK was always going to win, but there were still some great moments. One of my favorites was a brutal clothesline by Steve Austin on HBK, which really played into the concussion storyline, but the announcers failed to mention it. Jerry Lawler played hide-and-seek under the ring, and Diesel continues a slow burn heel turn. As for the rest of the show, Brett and Undertaker put on an underwhelming match. Jarrett helps carry Moa Dib to a decent match, and Goldust and Razor put together an intriguing match. A middle-of-the-road rumble, which really only furthered storylines heading into WrestleMania.
Safazio DeFazio.
Do you want me to do this one, since I'm pretty good at doing one long sentence?
No, I'm going
to
take a break at it.
You got it?
All
right, go ahead.
You take a break. I'll take a crack at it.
All right, go ahead.
Call me Mr. 1996. That's right. My rebel phase, the Royal Rumble, was just awesome. The things that went on the Razor Ramon Goldust match was pretty good. My dad was praying on win for Razor, but one curtain call later was like over that stupid 1-2-3 kid anyways. On to Ahmed Johnson. Great match. Billy Ray Cyrus wannabe. Then the chips came out. My dad asked, where's that asshole? I'm like, Dad, relax, okay? He may be in the rumble. Pause. Okay, on to the debut of Vader. I loved it. Enough said. Now the rest of the Rumble is pretty good. Okay, now the Brett Taker match was when Taker's mask comes off during the match. And also this happens. Diesel comes down to ringside and flips a bird. I'm like, yes, yes. Wow, that sucks. Okay, now it begins my Rumble. Let's just say he turned me heel. Lol. All in all, amazing match. Three of my favorite guys were in it. It's time to the Rumble. Now, the Rumble in 96 was amazing and exciting. Like, guys from USWA and the WWF were in it. We saw debuts like Steve Austin, enough said. And then we saw down to Shawn Michaels. Well, my dad was still a Shawn hater at this point, but he did win it. He won the Rumble, and he made me a believer again. Now, the Lex Kruger, well, at this point, no one cares, because he's just trying to get under Hulk Hogan's skin.
Did you really say lol?
Hey, I read it like it's punctuated.
That's the most periods he's ever had in one of his you're the best. The man who took over Jack Tunney's Toronto offices.
Yes, we love you, Safazio.
Yes, Safazio. You are the head of the PTB Nation.
The master of the YouTube link.
Yes, the PTB Nation Toronto offices. Steve Riddle. Rumble 96 is really just an okay show. The opener is average as Jarrett is out the door with a guitar shot to Ahmed Johnson. Tag title match is good as the Guns work a good match with the Body Donnas. Razor Goldust was a decent match as Goldust gets the upset win and becomes IC champion. The Rumble match itself was pretty good with a big return in Jake Roberts, huge debuts of Vader and Steve Austin, and Hunter Hearst Helmsley, Holly and Lawler getting good chunks of time in the ring. But it's pretty obvious that Shawn was going to win, but that's what everyone wanted, and that's what they got as he pitches his boy Diesel to win the match. Main event time is Taker's rewarder for putting up with the crap handed to him in 1995. Sadly, he and Brett only put on an okay match as Brett was going through the motions, and this was more a setup for a Taker-Diesel feud. Overall, the show wasn't bad, but not great either. However, it is head and shoulders better than anything we saw in 1995.
Mike, $5 Furlong. I'm split on how I feel about this Rumble. On the one hand, I like how for almost a third of it, no one was eliminated. When a lot of you guys get longer runs in the Rumble, I feel it puts over the importance of the match and how badly guys will fight to win the title shot. On the other hand, I had a lot of who entrants. I still have no idea who the two masked guys were. And it was really obvious Shawn would win. Once we get to the ridiculous spot where he somehow manages to eliminate Yoko and Vader at once, it's obvious no one's going to stop him. The Rumble should have gone on last. The Bret Undertaker match may have seemed like the most boring world title match I've ever seen.
Scott Scallion.
Another good jobber name.
We are. Ron Cumberland should have stole some of these. Royal Rumble 96 was a show that seemed to have a lot of promise going into it. There were a lot of fresh faces and hot feuds. A returning Shawn Michaels was attempting to win the event for the second year in a row, and two of the most over faces in the company were competing for the WWF title. In the end, it may have been effective for advancing the current feuds and setting up a few new ones, but ultimately the show did not live up to its full potential. Despite the questions about his health, Michaels was the obvious choice to win the Rumble. I feel like they should have played up the concussion angle more for this match, as they would do in the weeks to follow. As a result, the Rumble match lacked any real drama, and is more notable for the WWF pay-per-view debuts of Vader and the Ringmaster. The WWF title match fell way short the quality of the past two main events, and the finish made Bret look weak. It didn't seem like the fans knew how to react to this match, and the in-ring action was pretty dull until near the end. However, it was great to have Mr. Perfect back in the booth, and to see Jake the Snake in a WWF ring again.
And finally, Peter Khalil. Good show. I really like this Royal Rumble. HBK winning, Vader debuting, Jake returning, Helmsley going the distance. This Royal Rumble had the best star power since 92. The undercard was underwhelming, and Bret vs. Taker was good, but I hate DQ endings. But it did build towards one of the best WrestleManias ever. And we'd like to thank you, as always, PTV Nation, for your feedback. I really liked the feedback this week. It was
I did too.
It was good, and we also had a few new people, which is cool to see as well.
Yes. So.
Thank you, everyone. So that'll wrap up our vintage vault for Royal Rumble 96. I hope you all enjoyed it. And we will be back later this week, of course, with our headlines on Wednesday night. We're going to talk some wrestling. We're going to try and sneak some baseball in as well, with wrestling kind of slowing down finally with the WrestleMania behind us. Yes. And Thursday night, of course, we will be interviewing Gary Michael Capetta along with Graham Cawthon. Not sure when that'll be posted. It'll be posted sometime Thursday or Friday. So stay tuned for that. We're really looking forward to it. Should be a good time. Make sure you get your questions in.
So it also means that we will not have a vault next week.
Right.
The Capetta, or the awesome Gary Michael Capetta podcast, will replace that. So we will do In Your House number 6 the following week.
Right. Of course, that is because Scott will be coming here. We will talk about more of that on the headlines, I guess. Your trip here to Rhode Island. In a while.
Yes. And speaking of, I'm actually a little upset. Obviously, not my fault or anybody else's, but it's kind of sad that the Silverback gets to meet your daughter before I do, but at least it'll be an upgrade. Yes. So if she starts crying hysterically tomorrow night, you'll know why.
She's going to find out what true ugly is tomorrow night.
She gets a major upgrade next weekend. So,
So that's that. So yeah, we'll be back this week. Headlines, Capetta. Check us out, please, on the Bigelow34.proboards.com message board. The new tournament's going to be starting up soon. We'll give you more info on that once it gets going. Visit us on Facebook, Place to Be Podcast, on Twitter, Place Number 2B Podcast. Of course, visit Graham, thehistoryofwd.com, and History of WWE on Twitter as well. And please listen to us at Stitcher.com as well as Podbean. So with all that said, with everything in the bank, we close the vault, and we'll talk to you later this week. Take care, Nation.
Happy Easter!